for the prayer by our chaplain, Pastor Gock, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
From the 12th chapter of Proverbs, we read, "Those who counsel peace know joy." Almighty God, on such a beautiful day, it is hard to look about us and not see your presence. And you provide us guidance so that we might know the joy that comes from knowing you. May we this week be about those things that lead us to you and do the things you require, so we live and speak and act as we should with one another. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, here. Chappelle Nadal,
aye.
Cunningham,
here.
Curls,
here.
Dempsey,
here.
Dixon,
here.
Emery,
here.
Holzman,
here.
Justice,
here.
Kevney,
here.
Kehoe,
here.
Kraus,
here.
Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Libla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sader, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from Polk.
Here.
A quorum is present. The Missouri Senate is now in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 13th day, Thursday, January 31st,
Senator
2013.
From Newton.
Mr. President, I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as open and fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Senator from the 10th. Send it forward.
Let me get that.
Wow. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 253, introduced by Senator Justice.
An act for the sole purpose of restructuring the Missouri Criminal Code.
Senator.
This is the rewrite of the criminal code that we filed last year. Over the interim, I was able to, with Representative Stanley Cox and some of the senators and some of the House members, sit down and have six intensive weeks of hearings on actually what's in the bill. And so what I wanted to offer to my colleagues today is, if you have any questions in all seriousness about what is in the 1,071-page bill, please feel free to come talk to me, talk to Representative Cox. We'd be happy to explain to you what it is we're trying to do. I know that it's going to be hard for you to understand, but there really, truly is nothing controversial in there. And I know. It probably should be a consent bill. But what I would like to do, though, is help educate you on the bill and help you really get an idea of what's in there, because I think the time has come for us to rewrite the criminal code in the state of Missouri. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Johnson.
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill. Marty Drill.
Senate Bill number 254, introduced by Senator Pierce, an act relating to loan fees.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is an act relating to loan fees.
Senator from 15th.
Bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 255, introduced by Senator Schmidt and Senator Schaefer, an act relating to the Administrative Law Judge Review Committee.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. One of the great paradoxes of life. This is a great bill, yet deserves no explanation.
Senator from Clay.
I have two bills.
Send them forward. Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 256, introduced by Senator Silvey, an act relating to the Safe Place for Newborns Act.
Senator.
Nation.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 257, introduced by Senator Silvey, an act relating to port improvement districts.
Also no explanation, yes, sir.
Senator from the 11th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 258, introduced by Senator Lavota, an act relating to the Board of Directors of the Kansas City School District.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a simple bill that would change the Kansas City School Board from 9 members to 7 members and change the date that they would be elected with the municipal elections. It would increase public engagement in that school district, and it's a good bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
President, I have a bill.
Send it forward, sir. Read the bill of the Senator from Buchanan.
Senate Bill number 259, introduced by Senator Schaaf, an act relating to reportable infectious diseases.
Senator.
Mr. President, there is a really bad resistant germ that has taken hold in the hospitals in our country, and it's called cefepime-resistant Klebsiella. And according to the CDC, it kills upwards of half of the people who contract it. This bill would make it a reportable illness in Missouri. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, introduction of a bill.
Send it forward.
No explanation needed at this time.
Thank you, Senator. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 260, introduced by Senator Brown, an act relating to reimbursement of non-participating facility-based providers.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Due to the size of Senate Bill 253, I would request unanimous consent of the Senate to suspend Senate Rule 49 for printing purposes, and for the Senate, all this does is allow us to print a shorter version in the journal.
Does any senator object to that unanimous consent request? Hearing none, that is how we shall proceed. Senator?
Do we need to vote on that motion, Mr. President?
It was a unanimous consent request.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Negative. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees. Senator from Boone.
Mr. President, with regards to the appointment of Doug Nelson as Commissioner of Administration, I move that the committee report be adopted and that the Senate do give its advice and consent to the appointment of Mr. Nelson to be the Commissioner of Administration.
You have heard the motion to adopt the committee report confirming the nominee. Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 8th.
Inquire, Senator from the 19th.
Senator, yield. He yields. You may inquire.
Senator, it's an interesting appointment for you, being the budget chair, and knowing that Doug had gone around and not, I mean, he was the final approval, I guess, on this airplane, and that's kind of why we've held him up to this point.
Right.
Are we getting some assurances that this is going to happen in the future, or?
You know, when they say that appropriation line, they had the ability to buy the airplane, that is true, because we knew they had to buy a helicopter. The question is that the ordinary custom and practice for the appropriations process? Absolutely not. It's something that we're not used to. Are we going to have to accept a new level of distrust, basically, when we look at these lines and maybe ratchet them down more than we did in the past, where we extended a professional courtesy because there was give and take and there was communication? Probably. But the question is, the governor is the governor. We as a body are not the governor, and he has chosen Doug Nelson. And as I said before, while I certainly don't agree with what they did, and I don't want to mislead anybody, this doesn't end the inquiry. The inquiry, I think, in several committees will go forward on the plane. But I think as far as intellect and ability and, frankly, honesty, for the most part, with us, I think Doug's been pretty honest. So I think he has all those qualities. I think we have a very unfortunate circumstance. I'll tell you, I don't think that Doug Nelson is the person who initiated the idea to buy a $5.6 million airplane. I think that he is simply one person in a chain of people that is involved in that approval process. So it is what it is.
I will yield to your knowledge of this situation, and you being the budget chair, I'll give you deference on this situation. I agree. Mr. Nelson is a great individual. I respect him. He's been in my office several times over the last few years, and I respect him. I'm cautious moving forward with purchases like this without going through the appropriation process, and I know
being it better not ever happen again. I mean, this is truly a case of fool me once, but I don't expect to see it again. I do think that in the appropriation process, both in the House and the Senate, I think we will be a little more vigilant than maybe, you know, previous appropriators had to be, because there was a level of dialogue and a level of trust that just doesn't seem to be there now. But if that's the world we live in, that's the world we live in, and we'll adjust accordingly.
Well, I hope I'm not on your committee anymore, and I'd like to be on there the last 2 years. I hope that going through the next process, going through the budget, you take away those E's, you make it very hard for him to spend money without us first appropriating it. Thank you.
Point well taken, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Clay. Does the senator yield? Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, I just want to take this opportunity to thank you for initially giving us a little bit more time on this motion when I had asked for it before. I appreciate your deference in that. As I talked to you before, I'm going to go ahead and vote for Mr. Nelson. I have great concerns about this particular process. I have great concerns that this purchase was made and the process through which it was made is being presented to this General Assembly as if it was solely the idea and solely the decision of the Colonel of the Highway Patrol, when It's been my experience.
Who serves at the leisure of the governor, by the way. So.
Correct, but it's been my experience around this building that that's never the case, that it's just one person, and then all of a sudden, oh, 2 weeks later, we have a brand new plane. Like, I don't buy it.
Okay? Yeah.
But I agree with your analysis that the appropriation, in my opinion, probably gave too broad of an authority, which allowed them to do this once, which I hope that we rein in. Again, my biggest disappointment through this was that we were never consulted, that we were never given the heads up, and ultimately that nobody in this administration is willing to stand up and take responsibility and say, yeah, it was my idea. Yeah, the appropriation said we could do it, and so we did it. Nobody so far has had the guts to do that. They've all pointed their finger at the colonel of the Highway Patrol. So that's a little frustrating for me, but it's not frustrating enough for me to try to block this nomination. Having worked with two governors, separate parties, it's kind of my conclusion that the commissioner of administration is always going to rubber stamp the governor. No matter who we put in there, they're always going to just rubber stamp whatever the governor wants. So my experience with Mr. Nelson over the last couple years while I was in the House has been a good one. As far as a rubber stamp goes, he's a decent one to work with. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and support the nomination. But I do appreciate you giving us the deference of allowing us some more time.
Yeah, and you and I worked on that line. I mean, I don't know. I guess we could have put language in the line that said you can buy one aircraft but not two, because we knew they were going to buy the helicopter. That would be pretty unusual to actually do that. So maybe it is we simply have to take the term aircraft out of that line for now on, because even though it's been in there for decades, I believe, awfully long time since that statute went into effect, you know, once you see an abuse on it, you have to come up with a response.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll have a much more in-depth conversation. I appreciate you entertaining that conversation as far as revolving funds and how they're used. And, you know, perhaps another idea is to say any purchase of any piece of equipment over X amount of dollars has to come through us, whether it's a revolving fund or not.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that you would just spend $6 million and go, oh, well, no, it's a revolving fund. I mean, that's pretty shady.
It's clearly a case of it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. I don't think that anyone believes that had they come to us and asked for a $5.6 million plane, that they probably could have made a successful argument to us, especially in the budget year that you and I were dealing with last year in crafting that budget, having to cut several hundred million dollars out of that budget to make it balance. And if someone would have come to us in that process and said, you know, we know you're cutting mental health, we know you're cutting education, but hey, you know what, we really need this $5.6 million plane, I think it's reasonable to assume that we would not have approved that.
Likely so. And in fact, one of the press reports that I read said the colonel had referenced, I think in the House Budget Committee, that they had wanted this plane since 2010, but I've been here since 2010. I don't ever remember a request.
I've never heard that request before either.
So anyway, Senator, I just want to thank you for your deference of allowing us some more time. I'm not going to further block the nomination.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr.
Does any other senator wish to be heard on the motion of the senator from Boone? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
President, I close.
The senator renews his motion on adoption of the committee report confirming this nominee. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The committee report is adopted. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection.
Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 1. The senator from the second. The senator from the second needs to enter the chamber. Senator from the second. Whenever. Senator from the second, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that
Senate Committee Subgroup, Senate Bill 1 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion from the Senator. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that we adopt Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 1. For my colleagues, Mr. President, Senate Bill 1 deals with the Second Injury Fund. This is something that has been a problem for the last 4 or 5 years here in the state. The problem is not going away. It's getting worse, and we do need to address it this year, and I will explain why I believe this year we have to get this done versus continuing to kick the can down the road. So first off, Mr. President, I will just explain, you know, what is the Second Injury Fund for my colleagues, just to bring them up to date. The Second Injury Fund was created in Missouri in 1943, basically to encourage employment of individuals that had previously been disabled or been hurt, and that would limit the employer's liability for combined disabilities beyond a workplace accident. The Second Injury Fund benefits individuals who have a compensable work-related injury by providing an incentive for employers to hire them in a streamlined process to adjudicate claims outside the courts. But basically, since then, the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 has kind of eradicated most of the reasons why we created the Second Injury Fund. The Second Injury Fund receives revenue that is collected off an annual surcharge off of every authorized self-insurer and every workers' compensation policy that is sold in Missouri. So Missouri businesses pay an additional percentage of premium off of their workers' compensation rates into this separate Second Injury Fund for this reason. Back in 2005, under Senate Bill 1, we capped that surcharge at 3%. So why are we discussing this today? We're discussing it because since 2005, with the Senate Bill 1 back then, they capped the surcharge at 3%. That year, revenue that was generated about $74 million that went into this fund. Well, as of 2012, last year, that same 3% generated a revenue of $42 million. Obviously, we're having a lot less revenue come into this fund. That is because, obviously, we capped it at 3%. The economy hit. We have larger people on the unemployment lines. They're not paying. They're not employees. And the economy pretty much drove down the number of workers. So we had a perfect storm here in the last several years that kind of culminated into why we have a Second Injury Fund that is completely broke, and it's going to continue to be broke unless we fix it. So the long-term liabilities to our state, the reason that we're having this discussion, is because every permanently totally disabled worker, this person is entitled to a biweekly check for the rest of their life because they are totally disabled. In 2011, the number of permanently totally disabled workers totaled just over 1,000 individuals, 1,076. And the estimated liability to this fund for just those awards was around $1 billion to continue those biweekly payments all the way out until that individual would pass on. This does not include the almost 30,000 cases that the Attorney General has stopped entering into settlement agreements. So if we were just to take the current 3% cap that we have on the Second Injury Fund, it would take us 30 years just to pay off our current liabilities without adding one new person onto the Second Injury Fund rolls. So here's our problem. Our problem is because of the increased number of claimants, the people accessing the Second Injury Fund, the 3% cap on revenues, and our high unemployment due to the recession, our liabilities have vastly increased over our revenues that are inside the fund. The Second Injury Fund cannot pay its liabilities in a timely manner, and the Attorney General in 2009 stopped settling cases. There was no money to continue settling these cases, so that means that every case has to go to a hearing. So obviously, those hearings are backing up, and we have almost a 30,000 case backlog of just Second Injury Fund cases. You know, just some simple quick math, if you just took a look at what we did. If we settled every case for about $10,000, assuming half of those cases would be dismissed because they were just frivolous, you're still looking at $150 million liability for the second injury fund. To add problems on top of that, summary judgments in the second injury fund are paid out at 9%. So we're being charged 9% interest on these cases. So just last year, for our inaction of solving this problem, so just the liabilities without adding any more new people, the interest on those cases went up $14 million. So we owe an additional $14 million to this problem just off of the interest of 9% that is being applied due to statutory interest. So that is the problem. That's what the second injury fund is, and that's why we're here. So what we decided to do is we came forward with Senate Bill 1. And this was kind of a continuation of the conversation that we were having last year on this issue that we couldn't quite get done by the time that was allotted before the end of session. So what Senate Bill 1 does is attempts to deal with this issue. The first thing we said is we have to have enough money to cover those individuals who have become permanently and totally disabled while they are working. You know, these are the ones that we have a social contract with. They've been hurt. They need to get those biweekly checks. So, that's about 80% of the cost of the fund. So we looked at some of the other things in the fund and how people were accessing it, and we felt that we should eliminate the permanently partial disabilities. Those are very small dollar amounts that really do not impact the fund that much. And they're also, through court cases and expansion of the second injury fund since the 1940s, you know, that we were also paying death benefits and things of that nature, which was never the intent of the second injury fund. So currently, Senate Bill 1 says we are going to cover those people who really are permanently and totally disabled and make sure they get those checks until their natural life. To access a second injury fund under Senate Bill 1, you have to have an original injury that was work-related, or if you were in the military service. Because if you go back into the early onset of why we created the second injury fund, Mr. President, and that is because we had a lot of people coming back from World War I that were disabled. World War II was going on, and so our workforce had left to join the Army, and so we had a lot of people that were left to build the bullets, to build the bombs, to build the tanks that had a pre-existing condition that were hurt. And so it was kind of the intent of those people that had been injured in the military was one of the reasons why this was created. So your original injury, or if you were military injured, would allow you to access the second injury fund if you had a subsequent injury. What Senate Bill 1 also does is it realizes that the 3% cap is insufficient to fund this a liability. So this is funded by all the businesses in the state, but we think that we need to increase that to at least 4.5%. So under Senate Bill 1, we are increasing that surcharge. We're removing the cap from 3%, moving it up to 4.5% in 2014, all the way till the year 2020. What is also in Senate Bill 1 is if that increase is not enough to take care of this backlog of cases, these 30,000 cases that the Attorney General has not been able to enter into a settlement agreements, that there is a commission that is set up inside of Senate Bill 1 that could increase that surcharge an additional 1.5%. That would bring it up to 6%. So in Senate Bill 1, we're going from 3 to 4.5, and then the option is for the commission, which is made up of the Speaker of the House, the President Pro Tem, the Attorney General, and the Governor of the state. If three or four of them agree that that is insufficient to pay our liabilities, they can then vote to then increase that up an additional 1.5% in the year 2015. And also to deal with the massive interest rate, back when this was created, 9%, you cannot find 9% on your money anywhere. So what we're doing is we are lowering the interest rate back to prime so that it would fluctuate with the economy. So if we have a period like we had in the 70s, we had 14, 15% interest rates, you would have 14%, 15% interest rates in your second injury fund on any interest that they would owe. But right now, just to pay a continued 9%, and no one else in the country is getting anywhere near to that, we wanted to just bring that back into par. All of these things combined will help us manage the cost of this fund. It'll help us get rid of that backlog of 30,000 cases so that people that have been injured do have money to compensate them for their injuries. The other things that we did a Senate committee substitute, Mr. President, which I have moved for the adoption, is we added a few things that were very minor. Just simply says right now in this program, you can submit your medical bills, 20 years later if you wanted to. We put a two-year cap on there, so you have 2 years to turn in your medical bills, just trying to bring, again, some certainty into what some of the exposure liability that is out there. And also there's a provision in there where these businesses are paying their second injury fund in advance. And if a company were to go out of business, Mr. President, there is no way that they can recoup the payment that they have made in advance. Currently under the law, they can get a tax credit, but if the business has gone out of business, they have nothing to apply the tax credit to because their business is gone. And this just sets up a mechanism of which they can receive their overpayment into the second injury fund. And so why must we act now, Mr. President? There's been some court cases that have been filed that are working its way through the system. There was actually a ruling about 2 weeks ago, and they kicked this up to the Supreme Court. But within this one ruling that is now headed to the Supreme Court, we had three different opinions. One opinion from one of the judges said that the liability for this backlog of cases falls on the state. Well, that is very concerning to us because all we are is we're just a pass-through. Business pays into the fund. The Attorney General defends them, and we pass the money through. It's not a state liability. But they said since we have not addressed this and we capped it at 3%, it could be viewed as a liability to the state. And all I know is that on the Appropriations Committee, we don't have $180 million to wipe out this. And how would that maybe possibly affect our AAA bond rating if all of a sudden $180 million liability shows up for the state? In the same case, we had a different judge that said, no, it's strictly business's liability. Now imagine if they come back and said, we need you guys to clear out this backlog of cases and we want you to do it within 2 years. You know, the surcharge on business in the state might go from 3% to 20%. And that might be a huge disincentive for a business that's struggling, trying to hire more people. All of a sudden, their insurance premiums go through the roof because they have to pay for this backlog, but it simply is a possibility that we cannot ignore. Then there's a third opinion that kind of said this would violate the grand bargain, which goes back into our workers' compensation laws, which basically says if you're hurt on the job, you have workers' compensation insurance that would compensate you. And so since we are not providing an adequate remedy to these individuals that are hurt, that could be construed as we're violating the grand bargain, so it could eliminate the workers' compensation exclusivity. And next thing you know, you would have all these workers' compensation claims now being moved over to the civil and circuit court, which would backlog them and not really be in the best interest of anybody. So we kind of have a ticking time bomb to where we've kicked this can down the road so far. We're running up on to either if we don't come up with a solution, Mr. President, I believe that the courts are going to put a gun to our head and say this is how you're going to solve it. And it's a scenario where no one wins. The employer that's hurt doesn't win. The employer doesn't win. The employee does not win. And, the trial bar doesn't win. No one wins because they don't want this to affect how, court cases are moving forward. So that being said, Mr. President, why am I dealing with this? I'm dealing with this simply because I've seen it been kicked down the road for 4 years. I have 2 years left in my term, Mr. President. I don't have an agenda, and I just realize that this is something that has risen to the significant level that I am not standing here beholden to one business group or one trade organization. There's going to be some amendments that I'm probably going to offer that will upset some of the business community. There'll be some things in here that upset the trial bar. There'll be some things in here that labor might not like. So it's not a position where I'm trying to push any agenda. I just feel that I was in a unique position in my last 2 years to try to get this done. So that being said, Mr. President, that is kind of why we are here. That is the problem. That is the solution that I've laid out before you. I do not believe this is the perfect piece of legislation. I am really interested in hearing my colleagues comment on how possibly we could make this better. So that being said, Mr. President, I do have an amendment that I would like to bring forward and move for its adoption that I believe that would make this run better, and I believe I left the amendment sitting on my desk. So while my dutiful chief of staff runs back up and looks for the vanilla folder that's on my desk that has the amendments in there, I will probably sit here and talk about what I did over the weekend. I only caught the second half of the Super Bowl because my stepdaughter obviously waited until the last minute to finish her science project, which was due today. So we were testing the pH levels of all these different antacids. Not really how you want to spend the first half of the Super Bowl. But just in case you are curious, the Equate brand of antacid actually fared very well. Bill LaRue, you're a great American. Look at this guy. He knew exactly what I needed, and he came down. So let's see. Which one of these are we going to file? Let's go with hey, there it is. Thank you. Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward.
Be read.
I'm sorry, Senator. Please repeat that.
It has not been distributed. I would ask that it be read.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment Number 1, offered by Senator Roop, amend Senate Committee Substitute Senate Bill Number 1, page 15, section 287.220, lines 116 through 117, by striking, quote, and with the express authorization of the majority of the Second Injury Fund Commission, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, end quote, and further amend lines 120 through 121 by striking, quote, and with the express authorization of the majority of the Second Injury Fund Commission, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, end quote, and further amend said bill, page 23, section 287.715, lines 107 through 126 by striking all of said lines.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the amendment and to explain the amendment to my colleagues. We've had a lot of commentary on who has the ability to increase the surcharge on business if there is not enough money set aside in the fund to cover our expenses. So in Senate Bill 1, in the Senate Committee Substitute that's before you, you have a commission that is set up of the Governor, the Attorney General, the Speaker of the House, and the President pro tem of the Senate. They would then decide if that additional 1.5% starting in 2015 would be needed. A lot of feedback we've heard is from those individuals is they don't want to be put in that position, who obviously wants to be standing there saying they're going to raise taxes or surcharges on businesses. The fear was that none of them would want to do it, so then we're stuck letting politics keep us from having enough funds to pay the claims for the people that have been hurt. So a lot of people said you need to eliminate that commission. Why not just let the Director of Industrial Relations, if the actuarial study says there still needs to be additional money, that they should be able to go ahead and increase the surcharge an additional 1.5% for bringing it from 4.5 to 6 all the way until you to your 2020 or until an actuarial study says it can be pulled back. After the year 2020, it then resorts back to the original amount. But what it does, this amendment does, my fellow colleagues, is it allows that the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House can approve judgments above $60,000. Because in case you have a judgment that comes in of somebody, there's the Shamel case where there was people that could get some type of a death benefit under the Shamel case until we changed that law. There's a handful of those sitting out there. They might have an exposure of $1.5 million. The Attorney General might come and say, we can settle this case for $200,000. They need a mechanism to where they can approve that award above $60,000 that is currently the max the Attorney General can do. That would put the President of the Senate and the President or the Speaker of the House would then be able to vote along with the Attorney General to approve those judgments above $60,000. So that's what the amendment does. I think it's good government. Most people think it's a good idea to take politics out of this. This would allow us to pay off our liability quicker if it's actuarially study says that we need to have that increased, and that can be done without any politics getting in to the thing. I will renew my motion, and I'll gladly answer any questions on the amendment.
The Senator from the Second has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 1. However, Senator from the Second, we need a technical correction on the amendment. In the amendment, where it references lines 120 through 121, The words to be stricken, the should be an A after authorization of, where it says the majority, it should be authorization of a majority.
I would move that you please make the technical correction at the dais.
Do you seek the unanimous consent?
I do seek unanimous consent.
Seeing no objection, the correction will be made. Welcome. Senator from Buchanan County, for what purpose do you rise? Senator from the Second, do you yield? He does. Proceed. Senator, proceed.
President, would you please have a copy of the amendment distributed?
Thank you. A copy of the amendment shall be distributed.
Thank you, Senator. I was trying to follow what you were doing here with this amendment. First of all, thank you for tackling this second injury fund problem. It's a big deal. Looking at page 15 where you've made the amendments, up above in the language that has been changed, it says the state treasurer, with the advice and consent of the attorney general, may enter into the settlements. So what you had was the treasurer would make the decision, or at least make the determination that it ought to happen, and then would go to the attorney general kind of for his stamp of approval. And if the attorney general didn't consent, then I guess it couldn't happen, right?
Correct. You would need the authority to spend the money, and then you'd also need the Attorney General to say, yes, I believe this is a good settlement.
Right. Now, the way that you're doing it with this amendment, it's going to be the state treasurer is going to make the initial decision, but then you're saying with the advice and consent of the Attorney General, President Pro Tem, and Speaker of the House. Well, my question is, what if only one of those three, well, actually there's three of them, the Attorney General, Pro Tem, Speaker of the House. What if one of them doesn't agree? What if it's only two out of three or one out of three? Is it just understood?
The amendment, and what that was a technical correction we had at the dais, it said with a express authorization of the majority of the Second Injury Fund Commission. So if you had two of the three, you would.
Okay, but you took that out. You now have you don't have
no,
the...
What I did, and it's kind of confusing, I don't know why we ended up doing this way, but we took out the commission to increase the fund percentage. But we're leaving in a commission only to deal with the judgments above $60,000. So beforehand, we had a four-person commission with the governor and the speaker. We got rid of that so we'd take politics out of should we increase it a higher percentage of what business is paying in to pay off that. We eliminated that in this amendment, and we're going with the director of industrial relations to set that interest rate if it's actuarially needed. And then in the same amendment, we're allowing a commission to exist only for the approval of these settlement judgments above 60%.
Okay, I guess my question is operational. What happens if the Attorney General and the President Pro Tem both agree, but the Speaker of the House says no?
Then there would be a majority of the commission that is approving it. You'd have two of the three, and so you would proceed with the judgment on the above the $60,000 would be approved.
And my question then is, where is the language saying that it would work that way, that states that it would be a majority of the three? Or do we even need that? It seems to me that we ought to have it in there, but I don't know where it is.
And I'm sorry, you are...
My question to you is, I think... I agree with you. If two out of the three of them think that that's what ought to happen, then that's what ought to happen. But my question is, where in the bill does it state that? Now that you've eliminated the words "and with the express authorization of the majority of."
Oh, you are correct. I am sorry. We were eliminating that. We were eliminating the majority. So now I'm sorry. You are correct, Senator. My apology. The judgments above $60,000 would have to, they all would have to agree.
Okay, so they
Thank
would.
You. Thank you for pointing okay. that out. That was my fault because on the technical.
And I want to ask this question. Is that what it says? It says, with the invites and consent of the Attorney General, President Pro Tem of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, do those words imply that all three of them have to agree?
I believe it does because it says you would have to have the advice and written consent of those. And if in the absence of one, if one says, no, I'm not giving my, then it would not trigger the
increased
settlement.
Well, because it's not clear to me, I wonder if it would be better if it said, with the advice and consent of the Attorney General and of the President Pro Tem, and of the... I'm just asking.
If research wants to clarify, and I am completely fine in making that more clear, but it was our intent was to have this commission only for those large summary judgments, and then they would all have to agree to exceed
$60,000. Well, I hope that the lawyers congregating over on the other side of the chamber are listening, and if they think that my comment has any value, then they will factor it in and maybe offer up an amendment, but I'm not so...
No, we'll look at it. If we end up, if we end up perfecting this, here tonight, we can maybe address that before we get to that point. And if we don't end up, we can look at that and for any possible future sub or something like that.
Since I'm inquiring of you, and I might as well inquire of you about some other stuff other than the amendment, do you mind?
No, go ahead.
Because I'm going to anyway. Why the 1 year on billing for physicians and medical providers? That's not the usual thing, although some insurances, I think, require you to do it within a year.
It's 2 years for services provided before July 1st of 2013.
Right.
So then
after that, it becomes 1 year. Is it just...
I think it was... We just picked a number, to be quite honest. I mean, it was, you could do it forever. I mean, you figured if you had an entire year to turn in your medical bills, that's a pretty common standard.
Okay.
So, there was no specific reason why we did that, right? We just figured it needed to be limited.
And then you've taken permanent partial disability out of the second injury fund, so I assume that now that will be covered under the regular workers' compensation.
Sure. If someone wanted to you know, go ahead and bring a case. You know, they would have that opportunity to do that. It just there would not be a specified settlement amount out of the second injury fund.
But they would be compensated under the workers' compensation.
If they wanted to go ahead and bring suit and bring it forward, a lot of these are very small dollar amount types of things, and they would have to then obviously prove that it was a workplace.
I just want to make sure that they have that option.
They have the option. Okay. They have that remedy. Yes, they do.
Okay, and then you're upping the surcharge from 3% all the way up to perhaps as high as 6%. Is
correct.
6 is the highest that it could go now?
In the way I have it drafted, yes, 6 is the highest as it would go.
And is the business community okay with that?
I mean, I think kicking and screaming and dragging them to the table, yeah.
But it has to happen, doesn't
it? Happen.
I mean, I don't see any way around it.
I mean, it has to happen. No one can deny we're not funding this correctly. It needs to be increased, so that's why we're immediately. My next amendment will immediately take us to 4.5%, and
okay.
then the director of industrial relations will have the ability to go an additional 1.5, and that is through the year 2020, which we believe will take care of the backlog of cases, and then it can resort back.
So you think that it'll take until 2020 to handle the backlog of cases if we do this?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think that you so basically you kind of be starting this in 14, so that's really 6 years. And for some of these kind of to work through and to get enough money into the fund, I would say probably that'd be a fair assumption. But of course, we're also making assumptions about variables of how many, you know, these cases would be dismissed, how many of the 30,000 backlog are real, you know, because a lot of times a lot of attorneys just check second injury fund, workers' comp all the time, knowing that they kind of do that for cover their own liability, that if something came up in discovery that they had this other injury they didn't know about. So, you know, a large percent of these cases will be dismissed. We know that, but the question is how many and at what time, and then what's the liability? We might have these paid off in 4 years. We might be 6, but we're making some assumptions.
Is it your opinion that the remedy that you're offering in the bill is adequate?
I believe it is adequate. I mean, I think you are you're increasing the amount the businesses are paying in by, you know, 50%, with the option to go to 100%. And to get through the backlogs of cases. So I think it's a pretty big, significant jump.
So I guess you don't think that it will require more than 6% ever, is what I'm asking.
I don't believe so. I mean, I think that I know the auditor came out with his audit and said 7%, but he was dealing with the same dollar amount, and so it was just, he wanted to get it done a little bit quicker. So I think it really is just how quickly you want to work through these backlog of cases. That kind of drives the amount that businesses are paying in, and I think that the 6% would get us, you know, done by the year 2020, possibly sooner.
Okay. My next question is the politics of the commission that you're creating. So let's just say that a year from now, it looks like the amount that we're collecting, I guess it's going to be 4.5% to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that a year from now it looks like 4.5% is not enough. The commission gets together and they can't agree to raise it for some political reason. You know, they don't want to do it.
What we're trying to do is get, in this amendment, we're getting rid of the commission.
Oh.
And we're going to the director of industrial relations. And if an actuarial study says, yeah, this 4.5 ain't going to cut it, then he has the ability to raise it to 6.
Does he have the obligation to raise it? Under that,
does not have the obligation, but he can raise it if it's actuarially sound. And then he also has the ability to lower it back down if it's actuarially sound that we're overfunded on the back end.
Okay. Well, thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Mr. President.
Further discussion, Senator from Buchanan County.
To inquire of the senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Did you hear my interchange with the Senator from the Second about the language about the pro tem and the Speaker of the House?
Are you going to be really mad at me if I say I didn't hear
That's
it?
That's okay.
Here's the problem, Senator. I have some problems with the language because of a separation of powers issue, and I was discussing that with some of my colleagues, and so I didn't hear your your exchange.
The thing is that the way this is worded, it just says, with the advice and consent of the Attorney General, President pro tem of the Senate, and Speaker of the House of Representatives. Well, my question is that does that, the way that that's worded, imply what the Senator from the Second intends to have happen, which is that all three of them independently have to give their advice and consent?
Oh, I see. I didn't even let my decision-making process go that far because I have concerns of putting two members from the General Assembly on the commission to take on a task that is executive in nature. I think that it makes sense to have a commission so that we don't have to slow down the process to approve these settlements. I think the commission makes sense. I don't think it should be members of the legislature. I think that we are then having members of the legislature take on executive powers that are not within our constitutional right.
Well, I heard that argument when we created the MoHealthNet Oversight Committee.
Yeah.
And of which I am appointed to sit on that. So if you could...
Okay, so what I need to know, for a minute I will suspend the fact that this is not patently unconstitutional, and I will look at it and with the eye of, is this going to require each of them? So where in the sentence does it put the new members of the commission?
Well, what the amendment does is on line 116 and 117, it strikes out, and with the express authorization of the majority of the Second Injury Fund Commission, and it just puts in President pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Reps.
So what it reads then is, notwithstanding subdivision 1 of this subsection to the contrary, the State Treasurer, with the advice and consent of the Attorney General,
comma,
President pro tem of the Senate, comma, and Speaker of the House of Representatives. Yes, the way that is drafted right now, it appears that that all three would require their consent.
Okay. Okay, well, I didn't know how a court would look at that. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the First, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the amendment sponsor, the Senator from the Second.
Senator from the Second, do you yield to the Senator from the First?
Yes, I do, Mr. President.
He does proceed.
I was listening carefully to your inquiry with the Senator from the 34th, and I wanted to follow up on one of the answers that you gave. I think we're of a common understanding that the second part of your amendment simply deletes the definition of the Second Injury Fund Commission found on page 23 of the bill. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that's no longer a defined term. And does that then mean there is no such animal as a Second Injury Fund Commission under the bill to the extent your amendment is adopted?
I'm sorry, you faded out there. I didn't catch the last part there.
So, by virtue of the second part of your amendment, can we agree that there is no such animal as the Second Injury Fund Commission in this bill to the extent your amendment is adopted?
Well, no, I believe we're having the Second Injury Fund Commission of the President pro tem, the Speaker of the House, and the Attorney General for the settlement, for the approval of settlement cases above $60,000.
Well, that's where we are not clear, and I don't think we're on the same page, and I want to make sure we both understand your amendment. Lines 11 and 12 of your amendment further amend said bill by deleting lines 107 through 126 of page 123, of page 23. And as I look at it, that certainly appears to be where the Second Injury Fund Commission is established and defined. So as I understand the amendment, if we adopt it, there's no Second Injury Fund Commission. Do I have that wrong?
If we adopt this amendment, you're eliminating the Second Injury Fund Commission that is in this Senate Committee substitute that is there to have the ability to increase the surcharge on businesses on their workers' compensation premiums.
And that gets to another answer that you gave the senator from the 34th. You said when you got to that point in the conversation, you said that somebody with the Department of Labor and Industrial Relations would then set the surcharge. Is that...
That is correct.
Help me understand how that's the case under this bill as amended to the extent your amendment is adopted. I'm not sure I see where it says that, is what I'm saying.
Because that's coming in the next amendment.
All right, so then you'd agree with me that if we adopt your amendment and no other, and we perfect your bill immediately after Amendment 1 goes on it, that is there then not a mechanism for changing the rate? If the Second Injury Fund Commission doesn't exist under Amendment 1 and your next amendment doesn't get on, then is there any way to change the 3%, or is it simply left to statute as currently established at 3%?
I'm sorry, I caught about 75% of that. So are you asking basically if this amendment gets on but the next one doesn't get on, then how do you raise it above?
In the event that's determined to be necessary, yes.
Well, I mean, I can always just pull the bill and drop a new substitute and we can just go at it that way, or we can have other people amend things and... But yeah, basically, if that were to not...
Got it. So if we adopt Amendment 1 and nothing else, there's no mechanism in the bill that we would then be voting on for perfection to change the statutory rate that's currently 3%. I just want to make sure I understand what I'm going to be asked to vote on. And I believe that you have another amendment coming.
Assuming that there's no other amendments
right. That
dealing with that. So if you're assuming that the next amendment doesn't get on... But then that would also make the assumption that no one else would want to try to amend that in any other way, shape, or form.
And I understand that. I just want to take these one at a time because you never know. All right. So going to the first part of your amendment, which strikes the reference to the Second Injury Fund Commission and adds the President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, you've heard... I believe the senator from the 10th offered the opinion that that really would require all three people to agree with the treasurer. And that's your understanding of the amendment?
And that was the intent as well.
Okay. So and we're talking about settlements in excess of $60,000, correct?
That is correct.
So, I mean, I just want to, I'm trying to understand how this works, and I'll say I'm an attorney in private practice. You know, sometimes we try cases, sometimes we settle them. And one of the key challenges in managing the negotiation process is making sure that you're on the same page with your client in terms of what authority you have to settle the case, whether you're the one filing the lawsuit or you're the one defending it. You can't settle without your client's blessing. And in this case, what we have is basically a four-layered process where to begin with, the treasurer has to want to settle the case. Is that right?
Yes.
And if the treasurer decides that this is one we settle, there are three separate hurdles that then have to be cleared, and all of them have to agree. Not, you know, let's just say it's an $80,000 settlement. You know, they have to agree to not $80,001 or $80,002, $80,003. They have to all agree on the same number. And these are people who are... elected by different constituencies. You have two statewide office holders and two people who were elected by a majority of their respective legislative chamber. And I just guess, I mean, do you see where you could have different points of view among those four people?
Yeah, you easily can. But this is really designed to deal with the leftover remnant of the Shamel decision, to whereas you might have a death benefit, you know, for surviving children, and your exposure is $1.5 million, and you can settle it for $200. There's really not going to be any other cases above this, above the $60,000, that really doesn't fall into those few that are straggling out there from when we fixed the Shamel decision.
I understood, and I'm just concerned with the scenario in which the state treasurer thinks $200,000 is reasonable, the attorney general agrees,
and the Speaker of the House agrees, but the President pro tem or any of the other two, sure, for some reason sees, sure, it differently, and in that case, we don't get settled, and then we wind up...
Right, but, right, fact, but as of right now, there's no mechanism to settle any cases beyond that. So there's no way to... If they came in and said, hey, we'll settle for $300,000 instead of $4 million, right now we can say there's no mechanism. If we do this, it gives them the authority to make those settlements, because right now they can't do that, even if they wanted to.
That's helpful. And I mean, as a practical matter, no claim is being settled. Every one of them is being tried because, true, there's simply no money to pay the claim.
True. We got to have money in the fund in order to even have these conversations to settle the cases. You're correct.
Your answer is very helpful. Thank you. I just remain concerned with the case in which there's differing views or just differing constituencies of the players at the table, apart from the separation of power concerns, which I have as well. For that reason, I'm likely to oppose the amendment, but I appreciate your work. Thank you.
No problem.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard? Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire the senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield to the senator from the 11th? He does. Proceed.
Senators, your inquiry answered as many, many questions that I had about the amendment, but also opened up some other ones, so I'm hoping you can walk me through this a bit. It gets rid of the commission and replaces the commission with the president pro tem, the speaker, and the attorney general to serve as the three that will decide if settlements over a certain amount can be settled. Is that correct?
Assuming they can all agree. I mean, you need four office holders to all,
right,
agree
the
on the same
too
number.
Because the treasurer has to bring it to them. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Now I'm the one having hearing problems.
Because the state treasurer has to bring it to them in the first place.
Right. I mean, if the state treasurer doesn't want to settle the case, we don't get anywhere.
Okay.
That's right.
The amendment also gets rid of where the commission, well, gets rid of the commission, but the commission's authority to increase the surcharge. But the senator from the 2nd said he has another amendment that would have someone else do that. Am I following that correct? It's hard to inquire because you could see how confused I am on my face if you saw me, because I'm trying to understand that. But is that your understanding as well?
I take him at his word. Okay. All I will say is that if Amendment 1 is adopted and apparently Amendment 2 is not, I am concerned that we find ourselves, I mean, effectively with the only way to change the rate being through the legislative, I mean, just directly changing it in statute, which is to say having the legislature weigh in on what the proper number ought to be as opposed to either a commission of elected office holders, some executive, some legislative, or an actuarially guided process.
So here's my question, which was in your inquiry with the senator from the 2nd. He said that currently there is no mechanism to settle cases over a certain amount. Is that correct?
That's what he said.
Is from your knowledge, is that correct? Because I really don't know.
Yeah, I have to say that in my work on this legislation, I have actually not focused on that precise question. I have no reason to doubt his representation on that, although I will say myself, it won't bother me any if somebody can offer me additional guidance on that point. But I take him at his word. But I believe that that's correct in part, and I don't know the history here. I'm speculating, but
right.
I know that there were some issues with second injury fund settlements at one time in our state's history, and I don't know if there was a legislative response to that that might have one can imagine where that chain of events might have resulted in the legislature restricting settlement above a certain amount for very sound policy reasons, and if that's how we got to the state of the law, and that is in fact the state of the law, I can certainly understand why we would have gotten there as a matter of good public policy.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard? Oh, Senator from the 11th.
Yes, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 2nd.
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield to the senator from the 11th? He does. Proceed.
Senator, I was trying to ask the senator from the 1st, because he has that legal degree that I do not have, but my question on this amendment, your inquiry of him, or his inquiry of you, helped me a little bit. But you're saying currently right now there is no mechanism for settling a case at a certain amount, over a certain amount?
Above $60,000, there's no mechanism.
There's no mechanism at all, or are you saying that the practical part of it is we're not settling them?
Well,
see
both
the
of
difference
those things.
In my question?
First off is the Attorney General has the authority to settle cases up to $60,000.
Okay.
And then secondly, there's no money, so he's not settling anything. So no money's flowing out the door. So,
okay.
So yes, you're correct on both.
So if there was money, hypothetically, and there was a case for over $60,000, what would happen to those cases?
I'm sorry.
Let's say there was money.
If
but the Attorney General can't settle a case over $60,000.
Right.
What would happen to that case?
They could...
they have to go to court?
They could try it. I mean, they could try it, I guess, and try to get a larger settlement.
Okay. Okay. So the remedy for the worker would be to go to the courts. So is part of your purpose of this is to provide that mechanism to help workers with over $60,000, or is that where you were going with this?
We're going with it is, and it's we're spending a lot of time on probably something that's probably not going to happen because it's just a few of those cases really dealing with the Shamel decision on those death benefits for the kids and how much lost wages and things. That's where you're going to get into the larger settlement cases. But that's our intent was that if we could have a liability of $1.5 million and the plaintiff's attorney came to the Attorney General and said, you know what? Rather than drag this thing out, we'll take $350,000. Let's call it a day.
Okay.
He can't. There's no. He has to say no.
Okay.
And so we're just saying, you know what? In these cases, go ahead, come to us. We'll approve it, and everybody wins in this case, including the taxpayers.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the explanation. What is your thoughts with your amendment? Because you're getting rid of a commission that you were recommending that we do in a bill before. So what? Is it through discussions that you figured out this wasn't as streamlined as you needed it, or
it was more just the hesitancy of people to adopt or go along with this provision?
Okay,
because they were fearful that if it was an election year and nobody wanted to seem like they were raising taxes on or surcharges on businesses, that we know we have a problem, we're here solving it. Don't put something in the bill that allows them to continue to kick the can down the road. Let's just deal with it up front, raise the surcharge, and solve this problem.
Well, I guess maybe a philosophical question for you, Senator. Do you think those people, regardless of the politics, should be the decision makers? I mean, when you're an elected official, you have to make some tough decisions. I see where you're going with this to make sure that we move the process along.
True. I mean, and they should be able to stand up and make that decision. But I've also watched this issue be, passed on year after year after year because nobody wanted to be considered the person that's raising surcharges on business.
All right. Well, thank you for your inquiry, Senator.
No,
that helps me with your amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the Senator from the 2nd.
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield? He does proceed.
Okay. I just want to... Again, everybody, I guess, has their own language on how they're understanding this here. I just want to understand where we're going. So before, what you originally had in the Senate committee substitute, you had a commission, the four-person commission, governor, AG, pro tem, speaker, who would be in charge of adjusting the rate. But that original 1.5%, right, was with the director, right?
Right.
And then over above that was the commission.
Anything above that from the years 2015 to 2020, it would have taken a majority vote of those four people that you just mentioned to get us to the 6%, which is a common, is getting to where we need to be to get this funded.
Right. Okay, so then, but with this amendment, you're saying that we're going to get rid of that commission with this amendment, and for the purposes of settlement, there's a two-person commission, pro tem and speaker,
along with the treasurer.
Okay.
The treasurer would have to say we want to settle this case.
Now, is that for settlement authority over and above 60?
Correct.
Okay. Now, my question, I guess, is, I know the practice has been before The settlement authority for the AG was at 60. I don't know if that was codified in law or that was just a standard practice or an agreement the AG had with the General Assembly, but then that was reduced, I believe, to 40,000. I happen to believe, just settling cases in your own practice, if you can, you know, and insurance companies would speak to this, if you can settle a case today for a certain dollar amount, that is much better than having your client pay out for, you know, for a period of years and having a long tail. So I don't have any issues necessarily with increased settlement authority if they can resolve the claims early. But I guess what I'm wondering is, are we putting a barrier in place now for settling that wasn't there? I guess I don't know the nature of what the AG, it was just this long-standing understanding that he wouldn't settle, he or she would not settle anything over and above 60 or 40. But I don't think there's any really restriction on that, although they're not settling anything now because they don't
right.
have the money.
Yeah, they're not doing anything now.
Okay. So be that as it may, if this amendment goes on then, that commission, that three-person commission exists for the sole purpose of settling cases over 60. The director is responsible for raising the rate, right? Raising the rate from where we're at now, from 3 to, is there a cap on that?
No, the next amendment I'm going to offer will take it.
We'll automatically raise it, right? 1.5?
Goal, right now we're at 3. My goal is to go to 4.5 immediately.
Right.
And then the director has the ability, if it's actuarially sound, to go to 6.
Okay, and then this leads to the question that really was the purpose of my inquiry then is, why wouldn't we just, and maybe there's a reason, just take the cap off? Because what happened in 05, right, a cap was established at 3.
Right.
What would happen if we just took the cap off? If you had an amendment to take the cap off, what would that, let's say you raise the cap to 7, you couldn't go any higher than, what would happen, how would that functionally
work? Well, I mean,
work?
In the past, the surcharges fluctuated from 2.5% to 4%. That's kind of where it's fluctuated.
Right, right.
And then we came in and capped it at 3% in 05. Now, granted, if the economy wouldn't have tanked in 2008, we wouldn't be having this conversation because back then we would have been close. So the reasoning behind is if you can have an actuarial study and the director can say, okay, you know, the economy just exploded, things are going great, we don't need this right now. Or, you know, the economy's slugging, there's still high unemployment, there's, and also our workers' compensation rates have dropped.
Right.
So we're paying a surcharge on those rates, so it's a great thing that our rates have dropped, but also our funding stream has dropped. And so by just taking it off, you know, he would have the ability to set that. But I think it provides, and this is why we did this back in 05, it provides a little bit more of, I guess, anticipation or certainty of what my costs are going to be moving forward for a business owner if I know that these are my costs. And what we're trying to do here is really just pay off that tail, those 30,000 cases, and then moving forward, what we had in 3% would be fine to carry us forward if we didn't have this big backlog.
How much is that? What's the value of that tail right now?
Oh,
like if we wanted to clear, if we wanted to clear it out.
I don't know, 100. I mean, the liabilities are about $1 billion. You're looking at 180 million if you were to settle every case at 10,000. If you had 30,000 cases, you figure half of them would be thrown out. Your 15,000 cases, we settled every one of them for 10,000. You're at 150 million. But I mean, you could go all the way up to settling them for more. So your minimum is 150 million. It could go up to several hundred million.
So the reason for, so I guess if the choice is between going up 1.5 and then having the director be able to fluctuate upward or downward after that versus just lifting the cap so that the director would be in charge of even that first 1.5%, right? I mean, that could be another option.
It'd be another option, but I think the problems that we've seen on this bill trying to get through both houses the last several years, that the more safety net controls we can provide businesses and employers of what my costs are going to be in the future, it helps them understand that they need to pay more in. So obviously, if you're a business owner and you're thinking, the thing that scares you the most is if the Supreme Court comes down and says you got to pay all these off in a year, and they say, okay, you're now paying 50% of what of a surcharge of your workers' compensation premiums, and they're going, my God, I mean, that's putting me out of business. That's their doomsday fear. And so by allowing them to say, okay, we know we need to pay more. We know we have this backlog. We know we benefit from having, you know, this fund there to settle these cases, but what is my long-term exposure? You cap me, it's we go to 4.5, have my biggest thing is 6, I can plan, I can deal with that, and I can move forward. So whether it's it gets us to where we need to go mathematically, so that's a win, but it's also a psychological, I know what my future brings if I want to expand my business, and it allows them to handle the increased surcharge that we're going to make them do.
So your case is, the argument you're making is, let's do it now, they'll know what it is, and then we move forward. What if the cap was lifted? And
that's a good point. You had a fluctuation year to year.
Because here's the deal. The truth is, and I appreciate you taking the lead on this, wherever we end up on it, because this is the first time in my fifth session here in the Missouri Senate, we've had a discussion about second injury fund on the Senate floor. You know, and if you think about that, this is a pretty big issue. It's a heady issue. I wasn't here in 05 whenever we wanted to make everybody feel good about 3%, you know, and then now here we are dealing with it. We also wanted to make people feel good about the foundation formula that same year, and now we're dealing with it, right? So I understand, and it's a hard issue, and so I'm just trying to understand what the menu of options are right now. You know, like, you've got the 1.5 hard increase within the fluctuation, and I'm trying to explore, because it's the first time we've been able to talk about it, really. What if you just raised the cap? What if you just lifted the cap?
Then you go back to it fluctuating every year like it had been.
We're setting a ceiling. Yeah.
That says, to fix this tail,
at a minimum, really, you got to be at 4.5.
Right. Yeah, we're going 4.5. Minimum, we got to be 4.5. I think we need to be at 6. I think every actuarial study says we'll be at 6, and that's where we should be, and that's where I'm trying to take this conversation. But, you know, I'm trying also to assuage the fears of the employer of, but I don't want to be at 28.
Right.
I don't want to be at 10. I want to know what is my exposure. I understand it has to go up. We need to fix this tail.
Is there a cap then? I get it now. You're creating a ceiling of 4.5, or I should say a floor of 4.5 in your next amendment. But what's the ceiling? What's the cap then?
Ceiling
6?
From 2015 to 2020, while we deal with this backlog of 30,000 cases, would be 6%.
6. Okay. And then after that, where does it go? Does the ceiling lower, or is it just adjusted downward?
It can lower.
But it can't go higher.
It can lower if it's, you know, if the director says it's actuarially sound, that we've dealt with this tail and we don't need, and employment is going great, the economy is going great, things are good, and we're collecting more money in the fund than we need to pay off these liabilities, it can ratchet down.
What if we just had a commission of the governor and the AG? I mean, they've pressed for this issue, right?
They're pressing for this
issue.
It's
in the state of the state, our attorney general is talking about how this needs to be fixed. How did he, in 05, I'm curious, how did he vote on this? Does anybody know?
The attorney,
did he cap it at 3?
I wasn't,
I'd be
in
curious.
Senate in 05. I came in 06, so I was over on
maybe,
the other side.
That's right. Isn't that interesting? There's no one in the Senate right now that was in the Senate in 05. That's pretty remarkable. In the House, right.
But yeah, I was in the House, but not in the Senate.
Right. As Victor Callahan once said, it takes 5 of them to make 1 of you. Is what he famously said one time. But anyway, I'd be curious. I don't know how, and I'm not trying to make this, I'm just curious, because he wants a fix now, right? He wants us to do the fix. How did he vote to cap it at 3, which was probably in hindsight?
I would probably say, well, that was back when he was a Republican, so probably he was, right. He was running around with the business groups and singing Kumbaya. So my guess is he probably voted yes, but I can't speak for him.
Right, and I didn't. This isn't op research. I'm not like looking up the file how he voted. I'm just curious. So that's what we've got in front of us right now is to have this 3-person commission to deal with. What happens if this amendment and maybe this is what the senator from the first was talking about, if this amendment goes on, but then the next amendment fails, what happens?
I believe that the director has the ability, and the next amendment takes us directly to 4.5.
Right. Let's say that goes down.
Then we don't go to 4.5.
And we have a ceiling of, or a basement of 3 still?
No, we would eventually go to 4.5, but we wouldn't go to 4.5 until till 2015. Because my next amendment is, it's weird how it works, but we're trying to get us to 4.5 as quickly as possible, starting in January of 14, which, remember, we're in the half of a fiscal year. And then that would allow us to ramp up. It gets us to 6% quicker of just how it works out.
So let me ask, are you, as a sponsor bill, are you comfortable with the scenario that, look, I think having more, giving the Attorney General, letting him do his job and settle cases, and I think that makes some sense. If the floor never changes from 3 and the ceiling is 6, but that the director has the discretion in between that 3% area.
But no, if the next amendment that I have that's taken it to 4.5 fails, then we're stuck at 3 because we're back on the cap.
Well, that gets to what I was talking about earlier. Why not just, you could just lift the cap, right? You could raise the cap.
Right, I could just go right to 6, too.
You could. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that goes on, though.
I know. and that's why we're in year 4 of dealing with this issue.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is say, okay, we're getting rid of the commission, taking politics out. Next amendment, we're going to go right to 4.5 because everybody agrees we've got to at least be at 4.5. Then if an actuarial study says that we need more than that, then the director has the ability to go to 6 between the years 2015 and 2020 because they're going to need to do the actuarial study and see it. But at least we're collecting another 50%, another 1.5% into the fund. That gives the Attorney General some working capital so that he can start working through these case logs. I mean, also we have, I mean, gosh, what do they have, 35 attorneys that have a backlog of about 800 cases each. Mm-hmm. So he needs some capital to get you know, these settlements and things moving forward. So the 4.5 that we're going to in the next amendment does that. And then that gives us immediately, they can say, okay, let's do the actuarial study. Boom, let's get to 6 as quick as we can. That would be January 15. You can do that for 5 years to the till 2020. But if I go right to 6, I lose people.
What if you allow the director, may go to 4.5?
You would then have to remove the 3% cap that we put in 2005, because he can't do that, because we have a cap.
And that was the nature of my question was,
right.
What if you just remove the cap and let the director set it, knowing that they're always going to be in the range between 3 and 6,
right? I think mathematically it works. Politically, we might run into some problems of people that want to know a certainty of what their exposure is.
Well, I think politically, though, you may have more of a problem getting people to vote for 4.5.
I don't think so.
No?
No. I mean, everybody needs... I mean, this, if we can't get this to 4.5, I'll pull the bill off and we'll just let the courts tell businesses what they're going to do and
Well, my only issue here's the thing. I know that the chamber and other people have talked about it and support it, but not everybody in downtown Kirkwood, you know, likes the chamber's position on all this stuff either. You know what I mean? They speak for business, but they right. don't speak for all businesses.
They don't.
And that's
they
what
don't.
I'm trying to balance here.
You know, and so. You got, I mean, it's not just a chamber. You got, you know, the trial attorneys. You got the labor. You got associated industries that don't get along with some other groups. You got the manufacturers.
So are they all on? I don't know.
Yeah. They're all over the board.
I didn't know if they were all on board with this.
And that's why I'm dealing with this issue is because, you know, I got a year and a half left here, you know, and I don't have a problem with telling them, no, this is the way it's going to be, and they're not going to like some of
yeah.
this. And I just, but I think that I know where we're at right now. I know everything that has failed the last 4 years, and I have, you know, we have to solve this problem with what do we do with the fund, how do we pay for it, and then we got to deal with the house and then the second floor, and they're just going to have to take 4.5 at the minimum.
Yeah. This is not easy. I get it.
But then most of the business groups and business people I've talked to have said, okay, as long as you can actuarially show us that it has to be higher than 4.5, we're cool. We don't like it, but if you can mathematically show us, so it's not just somebody pulling a number out of the air, that to fix this problem, but also they have a certainty that this backlog of cases eventually goes away.
Well, wouldn't that be better than to be decided by the statewide elected officials who are accountable to voters then, as opposed to the director?
No, I mean, I think we're dealing with it. This is the first time we've dealt with it on the Senate floor. Let's deal with it. Let's fix it. Let's take all the variables that could derail this 2 years down the road. The last thing I want to do is spend all this time trying to fix this problem, and then 2 years down the road, who knows who will be running for what or what will be running for where, and they decide not to do it because they'll think they're doing a favor for this person. And then you got workers out there that have been hurt, that deserve, you know, money from the secondary fund, and they can't get it because of that. Remove that variable, remove the politics from it, just go to 4.5 on our next amendment, and then the director can go from 1.5, and let's call it a day.
Well, I appreciate it. You and I worked together on a lot of stuff. We've been through the wars on some really important legislation. I admire you for taking this on, and we'll, for the first time, kind of see where this thing starts going on the floor here. So, okay, thanks, Senator.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield to the senator from the 14th?
Thank you.
He does proceed.
How are you doing today, Senator?
I am well. Thank you.
Jeff Smith once sat in that chair.
I'm aware of that fact.
I think I was the first one who told you that.
It might have been, but I can't swear to it.
I just knew I didn't want to sit in that chair, so I decided to sit in the seat where the senator from the 7th is, just because the former senator from the 4th used to sit there.
Now, isn't floor seating a function of seniority, such that if any of the other 9 members of my caucus had decided to spare me the honor of sitting in this particular desk, they might have taken it upon themselves to select this desk, but apparently none elected to do that?
Well, there's some senators who had a lot of seniority who decided to sit up in the front, but there are a couple of questions that you raised earlier that I kind of wanted to address. First of all, I know that you weren't around in 2005. I was here. There were at least 6 or 7 senators, bare minimum, who were here at the time, and I remember this being quite the controversial issue. And in, you know, you're an attorney, I'm not, I'm lay when it comes to some of this stuff, and I spent part of my weekend trying to comprehend what the second injury fund is and what does it mean to my constituents. And there's a lot I found, and in the middle of it, you know, I was sitting at a table, this long conference room table, and at the middle of my studies, I figured out that, you know, I realized that the senator from the 2nd is trying to be genuine in terms of raising the cap. That is a good move ahead, but we wouldn't have been here if we didn't establish a cap in 2005 in the first place.
That's right.
And so here's the other thing that I kind of want to talk about, in that I don't frankly think it's the economy that is bringing us to this point of 2008. You know, it's necessary for us to raise the cap. I think you understand that. Someone who's lay like myself, I understand that. And I think, you know, the people who are in support of this legislation is in support of that. But here's where my problem comes in. When it is said that we need to take the next several years to catch up, well, do you know how that's going to happen, Senator? How are we going to catch up by 2015 and 20?
Well, I think you're hinting at the fact that to the extent more of these cases get tried in the coming years, and presumably more of them result in judgments against the state, it will take longer than 2 to 3 years to, I mean, we will quite literally be chasing our tail on this, that as we are playing catch-up on the existing obligations and the judgments that have already been rendered, the well will continue to get deeper. and it will take us longer to dig ourselves out, especially if we move the cap gradually as opposed to more quickly. And I will say, I know the state auditor has issued a finding that 7% is the number it would take to address current and projected liabilities adequately. And so I think, like you, share the concern that perhaps rolling up the cap over time may result in additional interest payments by the state that would otherwise be unnecessary if we were to address the problem more quickly, and may also just take longer for the state to dig itself out of this, and any jeopardy to the credit rating, et cetera, bond rating, may be unnecessarily prolonged. Now, that said, the other side of that is, of course, you know, it's the business community that would, presumably to the extent the cap were to move up, the business community is the one that foots the bill for that, and I'm certainly sensitive to that, and I recognize that, you know, most folks would rather see an increase phasing gradually as opposed to dramatically. I mean, I think that was one of the themes in the tobacco tax question this last year. The source of the opposition there was, it wasn't so much that folks were against the increase necessarily, at least some folks were, and it just, they had a problem with it being too much too fast, and I think that could be an issue here as well. That said, you know, we're here today, tonight, this week, and all session, if necessary, to try to come to the right solution, and I share the Senator from the Second's belief that it's imperative that we do. I mean, at this point, with this court decision and just the beginning of the fund's insolvency, coupled with all the claims we have on the horizon, we're in a position right now where, you know, really we have to nip this in the bud.
Senator, but at the same time, I think that this is a preemptive measure to pass this legislation in the form that it is currently, because the court is going to decide. They're basically saying you're going to have to do something really quickly or else we're going to make the determination. And I think the proponents of this legislation are pretty much in the mindset, let's preempt the court now so that our employers don't have to pay more out. But here's the other problem. I think that the way we're going to catch up is not only by determining who can get access to becoming whole, and I think as an attorney you understand the language, a person who has been injured or a person who has been wronged, they go through the legal process in order to ultimately become whole. You understand that? But here's the thing. If you're a football player in high school and you are injured while you're on the field and you have a pre-existing condition, you're no longer covered in this. You get a job, you're on that job for 20 years, but that pre-existing condition that you have from back in the day when you were in high school doesn't count at all. You're not covered in here. And here's the other thing. Let's say you get polio at 7 or 8 years old. That's a pre-existing condition, and you get your job doing whatever for 20 years, and then something happens on the job. That polio, that person who has polio at 7 or 8, no longer is going to get a benefit of the second injury fund.
You've raised several concerns that I have with the bill as well, and I'm sure that there will be abundant additional discussion of those very points. As it pertains to the amendment, I will say, at least for the claims that would still be part of the fund, you know, one advantage in at least having a mechanism that would authorize settlement of suits in excess of $60,000 is it would allow some folks to get their recovery more quickly and with greater certainty than they otherwise would be able to.
But you're establishing in this legislation the haves and the have-nots by setting a priority, Senator. Do you not see that priority that is set in here? The way that it's currently happening, under my understanding, and again, I'm lay at this. This is kind of new. You know, I was new in 2005, and I just know that the senator from the 13th was very passionate about this issue on the floor. I do recall that, but But it looks like they're setting priorities with those who have a permanent disability and those who do not. So I think the way that they're going to save, they're going to go ahead and increase the cap. That's the right thing to do because there shouldn't have been a cap in the first place. I think the reason why we're here right now is because the legislation in 2005 was not to put together smartly and not thought out. Maybe it was the associated industries, maybe it was their plan to constrain the second injury fund so employers wouldn't have to share a burden. I kind of thought of it, again, I have to think of things in simple terms. It's kind of like your car insurance. Now, you could get what the state requires of your coverage, or you can go to the max and make sure everything is covered. So what is happening in this legislation is, the choice that the Associated Industries is making right here is we don't want to take the accountability of what may happen in the future. Even though something may happen, we're going to take the choice to make a risk of what may happen in the future. But at the same time, they are agreeing that people who have polio, people who are injured, people who have been in car accidents. A good example is someone who has served in the military in active duty and has decided to come home and is at home on our grounds in our country and then gets in a car accident. That person is not covered any longer as this bill is written. Do you see what some of my issues are with this legislation, Senator?
Absolutely, I do, and I share your concern, but I think getting to the point of why it is nonetheless important for us all to work together to try to arrive at some rendition of this that is, if not ideal for any, at the very least mutually agreeable. It is the recent court decision, the Skirvin decision, which you alluded to. In essence, if we don't act, what's going to happen? The court case gives you one answer to that question, kicks the question up to the Supreme Court, but raises several different possibilities. One would be that it would be a general revenue hit, which would be rather constraining of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and among others, and could potentially trade off with education and other important priorities in our state. Another possibility would be that either the cap could simply be invalidated, and the business community could look at the prospect of having no cap, which would probably not be their ideal outcome, or otherwise that the bill would be passed on to the business community.
Which is a risk.
Outside
they're
of the system.
They're
right.
Taking a risk.
Right.
Because they don't know what's going to happen, ultimately. They have no clue. A business owner has no clue what's going to happen. How many, Senator, perhaps you can tell me how many businesses ask what preconditions you may have. If they ask if you've broken an arm in the past, or if you've broken a leg in the past, or if you were hit by a car when you were a kid. Like, I was hit by a car when I was a kid. My head. Nobody asked me that. Every job I've ever had, no one's ever asked me that, what preconditions I may have. And see, here's the second part, the second problem I have with this amendment. And we were talking about the different commissions. Senator, do you know how many of us in the General Assembly have served in the executive branch?
I'd have to think on that for a minute. I doubt very many, although I will say, I mean, if by serving in the executive branch you would include my clerkship in the Office of Attorney General, then I would say that I have, but I don't think that's necessarily what you mean. Yeah.
I have too. So I remember being, the staff person for boards and commissions for the former lieutenant governor, and I remember doing the tobacco securitization. That was, statewide elected office holders. I remember all of the 16 boards and commissions that at that time the lieutenant governor served on. And I have no problem with a commission staying in place to deal with these types of issues. I think politics comes in when you get certain other people who may be aspiring for higher office into this formula of who gets to have something and who doesn't get to have something. And here's the other thing I'll say, Senator, because I know that you're new at this, but you have probably a better comprehension of it. I'm just trying to have a good comprehension of this. But one thing I do want to say is when we're dealing with an issue that is so important, when we're dealing with people's lives, their livelihoods, we need to give them the opportunity to be heard. But that also means when we're going through this legislation, every single piece of legislation, Senator, we need to be going through it with a fine-tooth comb. And right now, if you put this bill, in my opinion, and respectfully, in my opinion, you know, this is not a cookie-cutter issue, period. But it's very complex. And it has several different tiers, several different layers. And if we're moving really fast on this issue in particular, I hope it's not an example of how we're going to move forward for the rest of the session. Because this issue alone, which is not my primary issue, let me just say that out loud. It's not my primary issue, but it is a concern to me because the constituents that live in poverty in my district would be treated unfair because of this legislation and the way that it's written. And that is why I'm concerned about this bill, the way that it is written currently. And I think, again, if we do not pay attention to these elements, if we do not look at the mathematics of this, if we don't look at how one section relates to the other, then we're going to really miss the boat.
I share your concern, and I think it's very important that we do make sure that we take the time to get this right. But I'll also say, for the reasons that I've already mentioned, I do think it's important for the legislature to act on this question this year. You know, going back to where we started this inquiry, I have a friend who's a professor at the University of Missouri St. Louis, and I suspect that main campus may be either in your district or directly adjacent to it. But he is fond of saying that in government, the biggest source of problems is solutions. And I would respectfully suggest that we probably wouldn't be here tonight talking about this issue in the absence of the legislation that passed 7-8 years ago here. And I will say you're very kind to give me the benefit of the doubt on comprehension, but I have to say I defer to you having been here low these many years. This is only my third year in the building, and so issues like this are ones that I'm taking up for the first time, quite frankly. We had second injury fund legislation pending in the House during the 2 years I served, but it never made it to any committee that I served on for hearing, and it never made it to the floor. If it did, I didn't make it very long. I don't recall us taking any action in this arena in my time in the House. And certainly no legislation passed, or again, we wouldn't be here tonight. But I share your concerns with the bill and with the amendment and how it would work out. That said, I do think we need to work as hard as we can to try to make sure we get to a workable solution that can secure a majority of the votes in the body.
And the last thing, Senator, I just want to say, you know, be brave, say what's on your mind. You are being very kind, and, you know, I appreciate that. I think you should, you know, express how you feel, because I was sitting over in the corner, and I giggled at you for a second, because it seemed like you weren't really saying what was really on your mind. Now, that may be your style. You know, it's not my style, but, you know, everybody knows I say what's on my mind. But, you know, feel free to express yourself. Be open. Don't keep it all on your shoulders. Thank you, Mr. President.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard on Senate Amendment 1? Senator from the 5th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to inquire of the senator from the 2nd.
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield to the senator from the 5th?
I do.
He does proceed.
Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm doing well, Senator. How are you?
Great. I just have some questions here. Now, tell me exactly, what is it you're trying to do? You're trying to help the employee or the employer? What are you trying to do with this
trying to help
piece of legislation?
We're trying to help everybody. We're trying to help the state. We're trying to help the injured worker that there's no money in the second injury fund to pay their claim. We're trying to help the business owner so that they don't have massive liability, you know, for work-related claims like this. If that's why the fund is there. There's not enough money in the fund to the Attorney General to defend the employer. So everyone's losing. So we're trying to fix this problem and move forward so that we can allow people to be compensated when they're hurt.
Gentlemen, is it true to say that the premium base, I'm sorry, Senator, is it true
that... Thank I would you, like Senator. To point out that the first time you said that, I didn't say anything just because I wanted to be your friend.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Proceed.
True to say that the premium base for surcharges has declined within the last couple of years?
Correct.
Due to safety measures?
Yeah, I mean, our workplaces are much more safer. There's a lot of emphasis on safety. You've seen our workers' compensation rates have been going down. They're roughly around where they were around 1994. So when your funding mechanism is a percentage of your workers' compensation rates, our funding for the secondary fund has declined, in a large part due to we have a safer workplace.
Now, OSHA is doing a great job. I think they're doing an absolutely fabulous job with safety measures. Now, you wanted to cap it at 4.5%, correct?
We are going to, my next amendment is to take us to immediately to 4.5. That is correct.
And what's the logic behind that?
Because we have a backlog of 30,000 cases that the Attorney General has not had any money to settle, so they're all going to court, and they're just piling up and piling up because they can't work through them. And so the amount that's been collected into the second injury fund is about half of what it was 5 years or in 05 due to the safer workplaces, the lower work comp rates, and also the economy and the number of people that are not working as they were. And so we have to work through this backlog, and we need more money in the fund to do that.
Senator, we have a shrinking workforce. Isn't that true to say?
Yeah, our workforce, our unemployment is higher than what it was several years ago.
So, Senator, wouldn't you agree that by 2012 the workforce would increase rather than decrease, hopefully?
Well, obviously it's our hope that unemployment continues to go down and that we would have more people working, correct?
So why then would you drop the cap back to 3% if the workforce would be higher and there may be a possibility that you would have more claims due to more people working?
Well, what the reason behind that is because you need to work through this backlog of cases, so that backlog of cases will have been taken care of. And then with some of the other reforms in Senate Bill 1, we don't anticipate that the cost of the second injury fund will be as significant as it has been in the past.
Senator, how will your piece of legislation impact other, you know, the second injury fund has many roles. How would this piece of legislation impact the other roles of the second injury fund?
Well, what the biggest thing is obviously we're focusing on the permanent total disability. We're eliminating the permanent partial disability for the second injury fund, as well as, you know, the death benefit and things that has just been expanded that was not the intent of the fund. You know, so what we're trying to do is we're trying to just reform it moving forward to make sure that it is something that the businesses and the state and everybody can fiscally afford, and it also protects those workers who, you know, are permanently disabled and they can't work and they need compensation.
So the second injury fund actually also allows for injured employees to obtain physical rehabilitation. Isn't that true to say?
It does, right? As it stands right now, yes, it does.
Will your legislation impact that area in any way?
Yes, we are no longer going to be providing that benefit.
So you will no longer be providing rehabilitation for those who are injured due to work-related incidents?
They can access those things through workers' compensation.
They can do both right now, correct?
Yes, they can, but the cost to the fund is, He is difficult for us to manage. The same thing is with the death benefit. There's a death benefit in workers' comp. If you get killed, you get $5,000, goes to your benefits, and then you get, 66.6% of your standard weekly wage under work comp. So why are we having a separate benefit?
So, Senator, getting back to my first point, you're really not trying to help the injured. You're the employer.
Sure we are, because
I mean,
right
the employee.
Now, nobody's getting anything. So we're trying to make sure we have a fund that has money in it that can pay those that have been permanently, totally disabled, you know, that they cannot work, to take
in the process of doing away with the rehabilitation facilities part of it.
Yeah, that is one of the ancillary benefits that was not in the second injury fund when it was began. It had expanded and grown, you know, along with the death benefit, and we don't feel that that is what the second injury fund is designed to do. And moving forward, that is a benefit that they can recoup through workers' compensation.
So once we do away with the physical rehabilitation portion of the second injury fund, are you thinking that we will save monies then? Who will save money? The employer?
Well, that would be money that is not being expended from the fund, so you would have enough money there to provide those biweekly payments to those individuals who are totally disabled and cannot work again.
So the employer wouldn't have to pay into the funds for the purpose of rehabilitation. Isn't that true to say?
Well, they pay workers' compensation insurance to pay for those.
I'm talking about this second injury. The employer would not have to pay into the funds for the purpose of rehabilitating those that were injured on their job.
They would be paying their workers' compensation premiums. They would not be watching money come out of the second injury fund for that area. The only reason the second injury fund would be there would be not for rehabilitation or death benefits or second wage loss or things of that nature.
So, Senator, you think this is the right thing to do?
I do.
To deny people who work 20, 30 years and, you know, come to find out that they cannot work due to asbestos or whatever other toxic poison that entered into their body and their bloodstreams, and you believe that they shouldn't have the right to rehabilitation? By way of second injury, you think it's just workers' comp is okay, not
yeah, I
mean, second injury. They
I,
shouldn't
I,
have
I
that.
Think if you get hurt on the job and you go to workers' compensation, you say, I was hurt, here's my case, and I want rehabilitation services, that should be covered under workers' compensation, not the second injury fund.
Thank you, Senator. Mm-hmm.
Seeing the senator from the 22nd, what purpose do you rise?
Fire briefly of the senator from the 2nd.
Senator from the 2nd, you yield. He does proceed.
Senator, you missed the first half of the football game last night.
I did.
If you were going to miss a half, it would be the first half.
You know, and I actually was wanting San Francisco to win, so I was happy watching the second half.
Right. Just a short inquiry. We're on your amendment. If we adopt your amendment along with the first part that dealt with the pro tem and the speaker, the second part dealt with deleting the whole section of the second injury fund commission.
Correct.
Go to page 22 in your Senate committee substitute.
Got it.
You probably need another amendment or an amendment to your amendment, because on line 88 and on line 91 and 92, you reference the second injury fund commission, which, if your amendment's adopted, won't exist anymore.
All right.
You following me?
I am, and when I marked it up, I had the entire section 7 being eliminated.
I don't think that's... I don't think that's the amendment. You delete page 23, lines 107 okay. to 126. And then the other one's on page 15. The other changes are on page 15 where you strike.
Hey, if you're closer to the research table, if they think that we need to clarify that to get rid of that, then I'm completely fine.
I don't know if they were listening. They look busy.
But then again, it was Senate Research that drafted this.
What we're talking about on page 23, the second part of the senator's amendment deletes all of subsection 10, which thereby creates a second injury fund commission. On page 22, lines 88 and 91 and 92 reference the second injury fund commission that will no longer exist if we adopt his amendment. So we probably need to do an amendment to your amendment.
That's fine.
You want to? I don't know if anybody else is wanting to speak. We could stand at ease. We can. You and I can talk. We can do lines from Seinfeld.
I like the lines from Seinfeld, X. That's the best part.
Too many people still here to start doing that. I don't know if anybody is willing to talk, but I have the floor, Senator.
Do you want to just ask me?
Yeah, Mr. President, with unanimous consent, I'd ask that we stand at ease.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, we will stand at ease. Senator from the 22nd, what purpose do you rise?
I would move that we come back in. Reset.
The Senate is now back in session.
I guess to continue my inquiry of the senator from the 2nd.
Yes.
Never mind. Now, you have another amendment
right.
distributed that takes that section out. Curious why you just didn't offer that in this amendment since those two fit together, but... if this is adopted, I would hope we.
Yeah, this is how I had different things drafted, and I'm not an attorney, even though I play one on TV.
Okay, and we talked on the side a little bit. You know, current law, we have a hard cap at 3%.
Right.
You allow the director to raise the cap 1.5%. I know you have another amendment that actually ties into the issue
right.
we just dealt with. That's going to raise it to 4.5, but yet you're allowing another 1.5 to be raised on top of that. And where I'm confused is if we pass the new law and it's signed by the governor and there's a 4.5% hard cap, which is what it is, can't go above that, but then we allow the director to go above that. It would make more sense to me to just put the cap at 6 and if that's ultimately what
I mean, it's because we're just trying to fix the tail of these backlog of cases. So we're doing it from the years 2015 to 2020, because at that point you won't need a 6% surcharge.
Why don't you say it's a 6% hard cap until 2020, and then after January 1st, 2021, it goes to 4.5%?
Because
it looks like it's contradicting each other.
But we don't know right. how many of these cases, these 30,000 cases, are real.
Right.
I mean, that's the question. Is a lot of them will be dismissed because they're frivolous and they're just... So if 80% of them are dismissed, then we have a 6% for another 7 years, and we are collecting all this money in the fund. So that's why we said, let's go to the next amendment. Will say we're going to go immediately to 4.5, and then based on an actuarial report, we're going up and down.
I got you.
Got it.
And I would like to visit with you offline a little more about the issue I brought up with you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard on Senate Amendment 1? Senator from the 15th. What purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Jeffco.
Senator from Jefferson, do you yield?
Mr. President, it is Jefferson County, not Jeffco. But yes, I would yield gladly.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. Hey, so I was in my office.
You were raised in NoCo.
North County.
Or yeah, Norco.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
Yeah, representing. Anyway, my parents live up there. They were in the center from the 14th district, and through a quirk of redistricting now, they are like a pocket in the center from the 24th. So, by a block.
Was that on purpose?
I have no knowledge of that fact. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But anyway,
I do for you.
So I was in my office, and I heard your discussion, and I wanted to make sure I understood what your discussion was, because I know
which
he
part
wants to get to a vote. Was your question, why are we requiring the 4.5? Why wouldn't we just say the director could go from 3 to 6?
Yes.
Yes.
Because when we put it in statute, and it's a hard 4.5, I don't understand how by statute we could allow to go over that to the discretion of the director of workers' comp.
See, this is where this
why
is,
not just go right to 6 if that's the where we're wanting to get to?
Well, I think if the logic is that if it's over 4.5, the director should have the discretion to raise it, that same logic would apply between 3 and 4.5. I don't know why we're statutorily saying from 3 to 4.5. Because we're then raising the rate from 3 to 4.5, whether you think whatever.
Well, that was the debate in 2003, 2004, 2005. The people warned if we set the cap at 3% and, you know, something happens, we're going to have a backlog and we're not going to be able to pay out benefits to people that were justifiably deserved to get those benefits.
Well, see, what I would be more comfortable with is if we were talking about a ceiling, right, in the first year. Like, the director couldn't go higher than 4.5. Not that we're at 4.5.
Right.
And so that, and I think that's a way for people to feel comfortable in this process that the issues.
Yeah, so you wouldn't say not to exceed 4.5. You would say the ceiling of 6. So they could go above 3%,
yeah, or
to 6.
Or if it made people feel more comfortable, the political reality, you could have, you know, in that first whatever, you could have the ceiling be 4.5, and then you could have a ceiling. But at the end of the day, it's still the director making decisions based on the evidence as opposed to us coming in. And in the senator from the second and others may have a perfectly valid argument that that's where we need to be today. I just, this is just me venting a little bit. Look, the sins of 2005 are now kind of, everybody wanted to make everybody happy at the time, and look what we're doing. But that didn't, we're dealing with that now. The same is true on the co-employee liability we dealt with last year. Everybody wanted to say strict construction, and we're going to, you know, do this and that, and everybody wanted to pound on their chest. Well, we had to come out and fix that because we didn't explicitly say that co-employees were immune. And so I guess this is just an issue of statutory construction where why not give the maximum flexibility?
I think what the senator from the second is dealing with are a lot of different interest groups.
Yes.
And he's trying to maneuver this as delicately as he possibly can.
And we're just trying to help him
because
I understand. And we're helpers by nature, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Helper.
But I do think it doesn't hurt his bill in any way. It may make it more politically palatable for some people to say, We're giving the discretion immediately to the director, but that shall not exceed 4.5 in the first year. So that, you know, in here we're not, because there are, I mean, I quite frankly feel, you know, you're put in this position now because in 2005 everybody acted a certain way, and now we have to do something that they probably in foresight should have addressed. But understanding the dynamic that something needs to be done, there's a way to provide maybe that flexibility with also employers knowing it won't go higher than a certain amount in that first year. But then after that, or that first few years, and after that, it's based on, you know, the reserves. And there are also, I think, some other ideas on how you might be able to make that fund more solvent that maybe we'll get to. So I think we're, but again, this is not an easy process because this is the first time a huge bill like this with over 80 years of history is in front of this body now. And so I just think we ought to deal with it in a smart way.
It's refreshing to finally address a second injury fund.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard on Senate Amendment 1? Seeing none, Senator from the 2nd, you're recognized to close.
Just to remind the body, what we're voting on is we are eliminating the commission to take politics out of who can raise the surcharge on business for the second injury fund, but we are allowing for, in certain circumstances, the agreement for settling of cases above $60,000 with the treasurer, the speaker, and the president pro tem. And then my following amendment will, fix some of the technical issues that we have when we are dealing with the interest rate. With that, I close.
The senator from the 2nd has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 1. All those who are of the opinion the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
All those to the contrary, say nay.
Nay.
The nays appear to have it. Senator from the 2nd. Is there, I see you have one other member standing. You will have a standing division. All members will take their seats for a standing division. Standing division has been called. All those in favor of the adoption of Senate Amendment 1, please stand. Please be seated. All of those opposed to Senate Amendment 1, please stand. You may be seated. By your vote of 22 aye, 12 no, you have adopted Senate Amendment number 1. Further discussion on Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 1 as amended. Senator from the 2nd, what purpose do you rise?
I'm sending it forward, and it is 2.10S. It has been distributed. I'd ask for a waiver of the reading.
Which one? Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator from the second.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move for the adoption of the amendment. Mr. President and fellow senators, this is the amendment that I had spoken to beforehand that will immediately take us in 2014 to 4.5% on the surcharge on the second injury fund. It also cleans up the references to the commission that we just deleted when we delete those lines on page 22 that Senator from Jefferson County had mentioned. The idea here is, obviously, we have 30,000 backlog of cases. We have to get money into this fund to start adjudicating these things and settling them and getting them out. So this would take us to 4.5. And then the previous amendment that we just adopted gave the ability to go for an additional 1.5 to the director, which is in the Senate Committee substitute. So right now we are going from 3% to 4.5% in 2014. So what the amendment does, we have to have this to get money in the fund to get back these cases back. If not, I feel that everybody will lose if we get an unfavorable ruling from the Supreme Court in a couple months. I'll gladly answer any question, Mr. President. If not, I'd renew.
The senator from the second has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 2. Is any senator wishing to be heard on the motion? Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the second.
Senator from the second, do you yield?
Yes, I do.
He does proceed.
Good evening, Senator.
No. Hi.
Hi. I was confused before, so I sat here listening because all of your amendments were running together in one conversation.
True.
So I thought I'd kind of
go right through them all.
Yeah. I am. I can see. Yeah.
As long as her shoulders,
you know, Senator, I was warned about that. You would be the one that questioned about that.
Yeah, yeah. As long as your shoulders don't break the plane, we're good.
How's this?
That's great.
You like that?
I do.
Okay. Thank you. This is harder than learning baseball sometimes. So you're going to raise this to 4.5%, and I'm kind of thinking along the lines of what the senator from Jefferson said, and then the senator from the city of St. Louis said that, you know, if we're getting better with our safety and more conscious with our safety, so not enough money's going into the fund, is kind of some of the line of thinking. My line of thinking was in 2005, I think, when we did this. There were people who said, this is going to break the fund. There were a lot of people who said that we were purposely underfunding it. But we'll go with, things are getting better. People are behaving better in the workplace, and they are, because I've been there. I've seen it. So less money is going in. So then we're just going to do 4.5%. Why don't we just go to 6%, get the money we need in there, and what triggers it to go from 4.5%, the other 1.5%? If we have to have an actuarial do a study before we can go to that?
Yeah, it's on page 20 of the Senate Committee substitute.
Okay. But my question for that, how long does it take to do an actuarial study of that? Would it take months? Would it take...
Yeah, I mean, it'd probably take a year? No, it wouldn't take a year. I mean, you just gather the data and look at it and crunch all the numbers. And that's why we're starting this in 2014. And then in 2015, the director would have the ability to raise it an additional 1.5 if it is needed to help us get through this backlog of cases all the way to year 2020, and then it resorts back.
So what did you say our liability may be?
Our liability in the second injury fund would be, say,
you said 80% of the cases could be frivolous cases.
We have no idea. It could be 50,
right.
It could be 20.
We don't have any
right now, our liability on the second injury fund is $1 billion.
Okay, so say 50% of those cases were not deemed frivolous. You had to settle half of them.
Right.
Would that... 4.5% get us where we need to be?
It depends on what the amount. Yeah, I mean, the 4.5% will get us there. It's just how quickly do you want to get there? And so if we have a larger amount of claims that can be settled, and if we go to 6%, if it says we need more money to get these cases through, we can get it done quicker. Because right now, if we stayed at 3%, it takes us 30 years to pay off just those 30,000 cases.
How long is it going to take us to pay it off at 4.5% as opposed to 6%?
6%, I believe, can get us done around 2020, somewhere in there. There's a lot of variables going into that. So, you know, if you were less than that, you know, you're probably somewhere between 8 years and 30 years at 3%. You're somewhere in that mixture.
I guess that's not quite my question. If we went right to 6%, skip the 4.5, how soon would we settle these cases?
2020.
So either way, it's going to take that long.
I think either way, I mean, you could be off by 7 months, 8, and all this is dependent on a lot of unknown variables as we work through them. But the thing with going just to the 6%, what we're doing is we're just trying to pay off this backlog of cases. And that's why we're putting the discretion for the director with, if an actuarial study says, yes, it is needed to have this done, because if we get them paid off quicker, then you don't need to continue collecting the 6% because you don't have this backlog.
But if we gave them that discretion in 2014 or when, as opposed to waiting to 2015, wouldn't we settle these cases that much quicker?
Well, you won't work through the backlog of cases. You won't be able to get them done that quickly. And so our goal is to provide immediate money into the fund, which is this is what this amendment here does. This gives the Attorney General immediate cash. Say, boom, we're raising it. I have more cash. I can start this process. Once that, now they're starting to work this through this process, then it's like, all right, let's get the actuarial study and says, do we need more than what we have right now? We can go up to 6. He has the authority to say, yes, we can go up to 6 through the year 2020.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. How am I doing, Mr. President? I mean,
you did great. This was our first interaction here.
Senator.
I had paid more attention to my grandmother when she was trying to talk to me about posture. It would be much easier. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard? Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have an amendment to the amendment.
Send it forward. Senator, has it been distributed?
The amendment has not been distributed. I ask for it to be read.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Amendment Number 2, offered by Senator Holzman. Amendment 2, Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bill Number 1, page 1, section 287.715, line 4 through 5, by striking, quote, 4.5, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, 7, end quote. And further amend said amendment, line 8, by inserting immediately after all of said line the following, quote, and further amend page 23 of said bill, section 287.715, lines 105 through 106, by striking all of said lines and renumbering subsequent subsections accordingly, end quote.
Senator, would you care to explain your amendment?
Mr. President, after hearing the inquiry between the senator from the 22nd and the senator from the 2nd, and then hearing the inquiry from the senator from the 13th and the senator from the 2nd, it appeared to me that we should stop beating around the bush and solve the problem. The auditor stated that 7% would solve the tail that it would produce enough revenue for the fund in order to stop paying these interest payments that we're currently doing. It would set it as a maximum ceiling threshold, and it would also, the second part of this amendment essentially strikes the portion of the bill which requires the SIF fund to be the only fund that could provide resources to the problem. If we wanted to do appropriations, if we wanted to seek other means to add resources to this, we could. Essentially, this will solve our insolvency, which I believe we've been discussing, and so I would put this before the body. If the auditor is wrong, if the auditor's report that 7% is what's required for us to be solvent is incorrect, then I would be happy to hear from any senator who would suggest that statement.
The senator from the 7th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 2. Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 2nd, what purpose do you rise?
President, I want to speak on the amendment.
Proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. With all due respect, my colleague, appreciate your amendment. I'm going to ask my fellow senators to vote in opposition to this amendment for two reasons. First one is when you're taking out the section of law that says this is the sole source of funding for the second injury fund, this is business's liability. The state is just a pass-through for the funds that come from business to pay because they benefit from it. And they get legal representation from the Attorney General. I am fearful that this would then allow this to be interpreted that we could have to then spend general revenue on the second injury fund, which would open it up to being a state liability. Right now, this is a business liability. This is the business community. Every business pays into this because they're getting a benefit out of it. They're getting a benefit by not having increased exposure on higher risk if they have someone that has gotten a total disability through the second injury fund. So I'm fearful that this opens us up to general revenue or a court saying that we have to start now paying off these claims. This is strictly a business liability. As far as going to the 7%, I appreciate the auditor's audit, but I do know that in a struggling economy, when we're trying to have people that create jobs and hire more people, that you know an increase, even though it's just maybe seems like one more percent, it is still a difficult thing on businesses when they do have to absorb additional fees. Right now, I believe I can muster the votes to get this done at 6. Anything above that, I think, will get us into a difficult situation of trying to get something done this year and everyone loses. So for those two reasons, I would encourage my colleagues to vote against the amendment and just stick with the underlying amendment my behalf. Thank you.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 5th.
Senator from the 5th, do you yield to the senator from the 14th?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Senator, you were speaking earlier, and I only got a little bit of that. I was in my office, and I was explaining, you know, what a salmon croquette was to my assistant, and I was unable to fully listen to what you were talking about, but there was a little piece that I did hear of what you were saying. I think just a few moments ago, I took the opportunity to tell you that you were on the right track, but we needed to talk about it just a little bit more. So can you talk about it just a little bit so I can remember what my point was and the little slurb that I heard?
Yes, basically I asked the senator about other roles that the second injury fund plays. And one of those roles deals with the physical rehabilitation certificates and centers. And I was asking the senator, will his bill impact that area, the rehabilitation area of the second injury fund?
Okay,
and he basically said yes, it would basically do away with it. But as a result of that, workers' comp will handle the rehabilitation side of injuries.
Okay, so that gets me to the point that I was thinking when I was in my office. So I try to get my mind in, or get myself into the same shoes of the people who are supporting this legislation this weekend. And I'm gathering, from their position, they want less liability. The proponents of this kind of legislation want less liability. So from what I understand, the current job that you have, if there is an injury that you have, that's covered under workman's comp. If there is a pre-existing condition that you have, that is not covered. But an employer doesn't know what a pre-existing condition may be. There may be one, there may not be one. And so it kind of seems as though if you take away the shared liability, the surcharge that we have in the second injury fund, then you're putting more accountability and responsibility on workman's comp. I heard that. And for some reason, there was a bell just like ringing in my ear that said, would these proponents of this legislation want more liability under workman's comp? I'm kind of thinking no. So maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not, I don't know. It just seems as though the whole purpose of having a second injury fund is so that you can reduce the liability long term and share the burden just in case anything happens. So while we're at 3% right now, and I think a good number of us, at least in our caucus, are wanting to go to a 6 or 7%, which I think is a great idea from the senator from the 7th, and that puts us on the right track. That's absolutely wonderful. But at the same time, does the associated industry really want more liability under workman's comp? That seems like a bigger risk than investing in the second injury fund. Just guessing. I'm lay at this, so I'm trying to understand. Is that what you were talking about?
Senator, just going back to the stipend that employees receive by way of the second injury fund for the purpose of physical rehabilitation, do you think that we should just strip that, we should just do away with the stipends that employees receive as a result of their injury, and when they're not
able to. I agree with where you're going on this, Senator. And let me just tell you something. When you're working for a corporation and you're only making $8 an hour, which we know there are people in my district who are making only $8 an hour, and you think about the time that you have to take. And remember, some of these doctors that these injured workers have to go to, they may be in Chesterfield. Now, you know, down in your district, there's an employee who may work downtown, may live a block from downtown, does not have a car to get to work, but can't walk to work. And then the employer says, go to my doctor in Chesterfield, and you don't know if you can get to Chesterfield. And oh, by the way, this is a true story. They have to go to the airport after they take the metro, and then they have to take a cab from the airport to get to Chesterfield, and then they have to meet the doctor, and then they have to take a cab back to the airport from Chesterfield. And by the time that part is over, it's $76. Remember that this employee is only making $8 an hour, and they miss an entire day, and they don't get paid for that time to go to a doctor.
I agree with you.
Does
Senator.
Not make sense at all. Doesn't make any sense at all. So you know what? Frankly, if we want to put more responsibility on the employer under workman's comp, let's go and do it. Because right now we're trying to limit the burden for an employer by offering the second injury fund. We're trying to limit the burden. Let's go back to the example that I gave you earlier, was your car insurance. You could get the basic coverage that the state requires, but then you could go up a couple of notches so that you have full coverage. If you choose not to have that full coverage, if you're in an accident, you know, you have that deductible, but, you know, you may be responsible for a whole lot more in the long term, whole bunch more over here. But you're taking a risk. This is the choice that the proponents of this legislation are willing to take. And let me go back to the savings, because I'm really serious about these savings, these so-called savings, because this is really a stickler issue for me.
Savings to who?
To the state, the way that we're going to so-called catch up. We're going to catch up
with
the
second. What will be the
savings? We're going to make sure that people who have polio aren't included, who may get into a situation. We're going to make sure that those people who may have been injured in high school because of a football game or a hockey game, they're not going to be included, Senator. So the savings, the catch-up that we've been talking about, Senator, the savings truly is going to be on the backs of those people who have pre-existing liabilities. And they're trying, you know, it was stated earlier, we just want to get people back into the workforce. Let's get them back into the workforce. Let's do the best that we can to get them in the workforce, even though they may have a pre-existing condition. Let's get them back. Let's get them back. And then they get into an accident on the job. And then what happens?
They may just want to go to get rehabilitated. They may want to go to a rehabilitation center.
I think that's the first thing, because people want to work.
That will be done up under the existing bill. There would be no rehabilitation facilities that they can go to with their stipend.
But they don't want to pay for that, Senator. They don't want to pay for that. If we put all the burden back on workman's comp, say, hey, let's do it. You're going to pay more. Business X, pay more. We're trying to help you out over here by having the second injury fund. That's what we're trying to do. Trying to help you out so you don't have to pay all that money out. But no, that's not where we are. And see, that's one of the fundamental problems of this, Senator. And I just wanted to talk to you because I heard that little blurb that you had in my office. I apologize for not hearing it all. But it just seems as though to reduce your burden, if you're a business, you know, I'm not a business, I know that you're a businesswoman. My mom was a businesswoman for 26 years. And I kind of think that when you were in your business and when my mom was in her business, that you would want to reduce your overall burden, share the burden, so that you don't have to pay heavily on the end. That just seems to be practical. But I guess we're not being practical in this day and age. We're telling a person who has polio, oh, forget it. Don't get a job. Don't bother getting a job if you have polio. Don't bother being not an active member of the military, and you end up getting back to your home state, and then you get into a car accident, and then you want to get a job. Don't bother getting a job. Don't bother. You know why? Because that accident that military gentleman or woman was in is not even going to be covered ultimately. And if something happens to them on the job that they get that is associated, there's a domino effect. You know, I told you about when I had that accident when I was a kid. You know, I don't know what happened. I don't know what I had to go through. I don't remember all that. But just let's say you broke your arm when you were in fifth grade. And when it rains sometimes, you have a problem with your arm. And you got to stretch your arm out, Senator. And this arm is just really hurting. And then you get a job where you got it tight. Or you constantly have to put in some numbers or some digits. And then there's some big machinery that falls down on your hand, the same hand where you hurt your arm, and then all that is related to one another. Both of those things are related. And then we're trying to make a determination. How does someone make a determination on if the injury is related to the arm accident when you were in fifth grade, or is it just that big machine? Well, I would venture to say perhaps part of the responsibility, a good part of it, is on that employer for not putting that employee in a safe situation. So I just wanted to talk to you just briefly about that. I think you made a fine point. I do believe that it should have been talked about just a little bit more, but you are on the right path. I applaud you for that. And I think that any time any of us is, and I think the senator from the first was there also, he was on the right track, but we needed to talk just a little bit more so we could get some clarity on this. Because, you know, we're not always going to get the full story. We're not going to get the full story, Senator. And it's going to be completely impossible to get the full story unless we look at the nuts and bolts of the legislation that's before us. And I could tell you right now that that janitor, and this is your constituent, Senator, the janitor making $8 an hour who had to go to Chesterfield didn't get paid. Didn't get paid. Had to pay out $76 just to go to the doctor and get back. Now, I say that's an injustice. I really do. But you know what? You know, this session, I'm interested in reviewing the legislation that's going to help those people who live in poverty. But this legislation does not help those people who are trying to work. It does not help those people who are trying to work and there were pre-existing conditions, period. And that is a travesty, Senator. So thank you so much for this inquiry. I do appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 5th, what purpose do you rise?
I would like to inquire of the Senator from the 14th.
Senator from the 14th, do you yield to the inquiry? She does proceed.
Senator, in 2005, we were at 3% of surcharge, right?
Yes.
Equated to approximately $70 million. Isn't that true to say?
I don't know how much it was, but I know we didn't have a cap and we went to 3%.
Yeah. So $70 million. Now we're at a point where we want to increase it. Do you think that we would be revisiting this issue again 5 years from now because we're not solving the problem?
Well, you know, as I said, there is no cookie cutter approach to handle this kind of situation. This involves a long process, a very careful process, a very thoughtful process. And that's actually where we should be. But I kind of believe that, you know, you and I are in the minority and things are just going to be pushed. But obviously today there is a little bit of opposition. As you see, there were 12 votes against the last amendment, not 10, but there were 12. There has been conversation of why do we have a cap? We didn't have a cap. And let me tell you, Senator, you weren't here, but I was here. But let me tell you what I remember. What I remember, Senator, is that the Associated Industries, the Chamber of Commerce, they wanted to constrain the Second Injury Fund. And we're here today right now, because that piece of legislation was flawed. Imagine that.
What would happen if we just lifted the cap? What would happen?
Well, I think we would be where we were before. I mean, we would be in the appropriate place. I say lift the cap. Just lift it. You put us in this position. A lot of y'all who voted on this in the House are here today. You created the problem. You solved the problem. But if you're going to solve the problem, solve it right.
So 5 years ago, there wasn't a cap? Because I'm not familiar with what happened in 05.
There's no cap, from my understanding. There was no cap.
And they decided to put a cap on it at 3%.
They decided to create a cap, which was 3%.
And now we're here again.
Pretty much bottlenecking the
entire
fund. Because
they thought that would solve the problem, correct?
Yes, for only the business owners. But see, here's the thing. Again, this is a choice. The people who are representing this legislation, they are the ones who made a decision. They're the ones who made a choice. And they made a choice to create a cap, and they made a choice to get into the disaster that we're in right now. They made that choice. They're making a choice to go to 4.5% to 6% ultimately. Is that a good step in the right direction? Absolutely. But how are they doing it? They're doing it on the backs of people who have pre-existing conditions. They're doing it on the backs of people who have polio and cancer and heart disease. They're saying you're not allowed to be counted in this, Senator. Do you see the flaw in this legislation? Because I do. I see the flaw in this legislation. They're going to create and catch up on the backs of people who do not have any other choice. No other choices, period.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, we really need to quit putting Band-Aids on wounds. Because right now, you know, we're hemorrhaging, and a Band-Aid won't solve this problem.
Absolutely.
I truly believe that at the end of the day, we need to begin to look at what's going to work. And not what's going to work in the best interest of the employer.
You know, this is the show.
But what's in the best interest of the people? The people that are impacted every single day when they leave out of those factories after 10 years of working there to find out that they are, you know, ill due to asbestos, due to lead. We need to look out for those people, and I don't think that's what this bill does. This bill is not in the best interest of the worker. It's in the best interest of the employer. And we're here. We're here as senators to look out for the interests of the people that sent us here.
Yeah, I mean, for you and I, we represent people who are lower income, working class individuals. Obviously, you know, I thought that that group of people were in the majority of this state, but unfortunately, those who are in the higher classes are the ones who are part of the ruling party. You know, and it's just, I want to get to a point where we look after the poor, where we look after the people.
Look up here. Read that.
Nothing is politically right that is morally wrong.
This bill is morally wrong.
Well, I would agree, Senator. I absolutely would. And so here's what I would say. We need to take this opportunity to carefully review where we are. And, you know, I think it's brave to deal with this legislation, to deal with the second injury fund. It's a brave move. But I do, whichever senator said earlier, there are a lot of interests that are at play in this. Absolutely. But here's what I don't want to happen. What I don't want to happen is a higher liability to the state. Now, you know, it can either come from the businesses, how we resolve this issue, or it could come from our general revenue.
Senator,
but it's either or, it's not both.
You know, I would highly recommend the senator withdraw this bill and, you know, take a second look at
well,
it and
the
see
amendment.
How everyone could, not just the amendment, but just withdraw the whole bill and figure out how we can come to a common purpose and a common cause for the betterment of the employee as well as the employer. Because, I mean, we have to look out for both because but not at the expense of the workers. Mm-hmm. We have to fix the workers' comp. We know that the monies that are there is really not enough to provide all of the benefits.
But that's what they created in 2005. They made that choice to bottleneck this situation, the second injury fund. They made that choice. And now that the courts are saying you need to do something about it, now they're nervous. They're really nervous. So their compromise, the way that I see it, I'm just a layperson at this, but their compromise, Senator, is that they go up to 4.5%, ultimately 6%.
And then back down to 3%.
Yes.
Amazing. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. President, thank you very much.
Is any other senator seeking recognition? Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire the senator with the amendment to the amendment.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
Do.
He does proceed.
Senator, I was listening to your amendment to the amendment. It made sense until I heard Senator from the 14th and Senator 5th. I think they're probably right that we need to get rid of this bill altogether. But what you're trying to do with this is follow the recommendation of the state auditor and put in the number that's going to actually solve the problem. Is that right?
I'm saying that if we have a credit card bill that's been ran up and we know we have interest payments on that credit card bill, let's wipe out the principal so we can get back to square one so we stop paying the interest that is bankrupting the fund.
And what the senator from the second is doing with an amendment to increase it from three, is it three, what is it,
from three to four and a half as
three
a baseline.
To four, his amendment makes it from three to four and one half. He's
right.
Trying to solve the problem quicker too. But what you're trying to help him out more by increasing it to what has been said is the solution and even solve it quicker. Am I correct about that?
Yes, we are trying to get to the end of the road at a quicker rate.
So, Senator, you're helping the senator from the second, even though he, I guess, it's a matter of how quickly he wants to solve the problem.
It's a matter of how much liability we want business to absorb in order to preserve the fund.
Right, and won't you say they have this liability? That's
well, that's the second part of the amendment. I essentially would delete the requirement that only the second injury fund be the single source of revenue to pay off these complaints. If we feel that, again, if my savings account in my family's household has $10,000 in it and I have a credit card that has $10,000 worth of debt on it, that I'm paying $200 a month in interest. If I want to stop paying that $200 a month in interest,
right,
I will take the $10,000 from my savings and pay off the card.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that, yes, the second injury fund is set up to where business maintains the liability, which keeps the state and GR out of the equation. But if we've come to a fork in the road where we've got $1 billion in liability, and even if they say half of those are frivolous and we end up with $500 million in liability, and the senator from the second on his own point said that we're 30 years away from taking care of what we currently have,
mm-hmm,
let's do the right thing and pass the percentage necessary to pay it off.
That's
according to the auditor.
And I think probably the real solution is what the senator from the 5th and senator from the 14th said. But with that being said, your amendment helps solve the problem quicker, using basically the same mechanism as the senator from the 2nd is suggesting.
It's exactly the same. It just has the amounts necessary to make the fund solvent.
Okay. Thank you for your amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Senator from the 9th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the senator from the 2nd?
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield the inquiry from the senator from the 9th? He does proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Okay. So, clearly we've had a lot of discussion. I think the bill gives the cap at 4.5%. The senator from the 7th has an amendment to raise it to 7%. Walk me through this cap thing, this whole surcharge thing. A surcharge on what?
Second injury fund premiums are calculated as a percentage of your workers' compensation rates. So this is a percentage of your workers' compensation rates would then go into the second injury fund. So if you own a business, your premium for second injury fund is $100, and right now, it's currently 3%. So you would pay $103. So $3 would go into second injury fund, and $100 goes to your workers' comp.
Okay. So the businesses, of course, are paying the surcharge. So how will it be allocated? I mean,
goes into a fund.
Uh-huh.
And then that fund is then used to pay for the attorneys that defend the fund on the behalf of the businesses, and then they pay claims out of that fund.
Okay. So tell me what this means then for businesses in Missouri, and tell me what it means for those that are injured.
Well, right now, there's not enough money, so no claims are being paid. There's not settling any cases, not paying anything. So we have a backlog of 30,000
right.
cases.
Right.
What the gentleman from, I forget his district number, 7. So the 7th, his amendment is amending my amendment. I want to take us from 3 to 4.5%. And then that also gives the director the ability to go an additional 1.5% to help pay off this backlog of cases, so to going up to 6. He is taking his at 7, so then it would take us up to 8.5 if the director could go up to 8.5 to pay off this backlog of cases. And then he also eliminates some language that says that the sole source of funds for the second injury fund is the premiums that the business owners pay.
Okay. So, and I think they may have said this before, but I can't remember or missed it. So at 4.5%, it takes us how long to be able to pay off the backlog?
You know, it's hard to tell because you're dealing with assumptions of how many of the 30,000 cases will be dismissed, what amounts will they be settled at. You know, so we're estimating somewhere at 3%, it would have taken 30 years. So we're looking at, we were hoping with 6% to be done by the year 2020, so that's, seven years. If at 4.5%, assuming that the director didn't raise it to the 6, you're somewhere between 8 and 30, depending on where you would fall on that. I'm sure somebody could probably do the math, but I don't have it.
Okay. So then 7%, a rough estimate would place us at how long, you think?
Probably by the year 2020.
Okay, so 6 and 7% are probably around the... Okay.
It's going to...
All right. Thank you.
No problem.
Senator, for the inquiry.
Is any other senator wishing to be heard? Senator from the first.
Mr. President, may I start by asking that the amendment to the amendment be distributed and then inquire of the senator from the second.
The amendment to the amendment will be distributed. And who do you wish to inquire?
Second, Mr. President.
Senator from the second, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Okay, I want to take a few steps back, since what's in front of us right now is the amendment to the amendment. And in making sure that I understand what that does and does not do, I need to ask you a few questions about your underlying amendment and what it does to the underlying bill.
Sure.
Clear enough, your amendment starts by changing the cap from 3 to 4.5. That much is simple and clear as a bell. Your amendment has another change in it, though. And it changes page 22, lines 83 through 99 by striking them. I'm sorry, wrong amendment.
No, you're right.
I've got the right, yeah, by striking them in their entirety, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so page 22, lines 83 through 99, thank you, contain a mechanism whereby either the cap or the surcharge can be increased, looking at line 93, not to exceed 1.5%, correct?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure. The second part of your underlying amendment deletes page 22, lines 83 through 99, as I understand it. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And let's talk about what that section actually does. That is section 7 of 287.715, which all deals with the cap. And section 7, which your amendment would delete, says that if sections 1 through 6 don't get the job done to meet current and anticipated legal obligations and settlements of the fund, then in that event, it allows for an additional 1.5% surcharge. Is that correct?
Yeah, above that you have Section 6 says if we don't have enough, you can go to an additional 1.5. Section 7 talked about was those remaining that talked about the commission that we already get rid of, and this is removing the rest of that section on the commission.
Got it. So when the bill hit the floor, it had the 3% cap in Section 2, and then it had Section 6, which allowed for an additional 1.5%, and Section 7, which allowed for an additional 1.5%. So before your amendment, the bill allows a maximum of 6%, correct?
No, I think what it was allowing was the commission to go up the additional 1.5.
Well, as the bill stands now, you have Section 6, which allows a 1.5% increase, and then you have 7, which says, and by the way, if 3 plus 1.5 doesn't get it done, here's an additional 1.5, correct? That's what the bill says currently. If no amendments pass, that's what we would be voting into law, would be 3, and then 1.5 and 6, and then if that doesn't get it done, an additional 1.5 and 7, right?
No, I believe that the current Senate committee substitute is 3, and then it has the additional 1.5 in the Section 7 was just discussing the commission and how they would have the ability to go to that additional 1.5.
So I see line 76 on page 22, which says not to exceed 1.5%, and then I see line 93, and it says not to exceed 1.5%. Are you telling me that that is the same 1.5% in both sections? Because as I read 7, it says, should the anticipated collections authorized in subsections 2 through 6, which would include the 1.5% included in Section 6, then such necessary funds shall be collected with supplemental surcharge not to exceed 1.5%. So are you saying so?
Mr. President?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Senator from the second.
I have achieved my goal of getting caucus canceled. I would ask you to place this bill on the informal calendar.
The bill will be placed on the informal calendar pending Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 2. Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, would you inquire of the Secretary if we have messages from the governor, and if they are reorganization plans, please waive the reading and have them printed in the journal?
That will be done, Senator. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business announcements.
Senate is on the business of announcements. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
President, thank you, Mr. President. I just want to remind the body, Senator from Johnson is particularly interested in this, that all 34 of our members are members of the Sportsman Caucus. And tomorrow morning from 7 to 9, our fine Aaron Jeffries and his sons will be serving squirrel gravy and biscuits to all members of the Sportsman's Caucus. Thank you, Mr. President.
Duly noted, Senator. Senator from the 30th, what purpose do you rise?
President, your Committee on the Judiciary, Civil and Criminal Jurisprudence will meet 45 minutes after adjournment. At the rate we're going, that's about 10 till 8. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. As was mentioned by the Senator from the 2nd, who, by the way, is wearing the same suit that he wore when he graduated from college. He's in such great shape. As he mentioned, the Senate Republican Caucus is canceled and will be rescheduled later this week.
Thank you, Senator. Any further announcements? Seeing none, Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion. All those of the opinion, the motion shall prevail. Please say aye.
Aye.
All those to the contrary, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are adjourned under the rules.